another member. My name is Camacho. I'm a person of the community. Welcome to represent the Department of Energy and the three interpreters in the water. Apologies to the members who are not here. I'm informed that some members who are mentioned might still be on their way to the meeting. We need to do the manager here.
Thank you, Chair. Following your apologies. This is Marbella Marcele, so sick leave. Mrs. Lowe, who's attending some urgent party matters. And then also apologies from the Minister of Energy, the Deputy Minister of Energy, the Director General of the Department of Energy, who's attending an interministerial committee meeting that's taking place now at the same time. And then also an apology from the Minister of Higher Education and Training, Minister Mdimandi, who's having other commitments there. So those are your policies here.
The apology of Minister Mdimandi, I didn't hear that. And what about the Interministerial Committee? Is that the order? It hasn't happened. Okay, honorable members, they are the apologies. I take it they are accepted.
No, Chair, I was just missing out that I forgot to know what the Minister looks like. I don't even know how Minister is anymore. We haven't seen the Minister in so long. Let's maybe make a point of inviting her personally, Chair, to maybe come visit the committee every now and then, considering energy crisis, nuclear deal, Petrox A. There's so much to talk about. Thanks,
Chair. But also, Chair, he must not include us in one basket.
Yeah.
He must speak for about his times, not us. Yeah, thank you, Chair.
But also, Chair, this meeting is not about the Minister. It is about the issues that we have to discuss. Whoever wants to see the Minister can make his personal appointment. I think that is.
Okay. We are kept the apologies in all seriousness. We always try and make sure that either the minister or the deputy minister do attend meetings. And as honorable members would know, in the past they have been, at least one of them, been here. So I guess they have an important commitment today. So we'll see both of them or one of them next week, should they. I can assure you.
She is going to meet them again next week. We'll take a break.
Welcome,
what are you here for?
Honorable Papu. Okay, we can have a special presentation from the Department of Energy. We're trying to listen out there. I'm sure by now, I didn't introduce members by their parties. You know by now, yeah? After the interaction they have just had.
Okay.
The Department of Energy, and we have your presentation here.
Chairperson, honorable members, thank you very much for allowing us to share with you our skills development program. My name is Sandile Nanzi. I'm acting deputy in corporate services. I'm supported by my colleagues. Next to me is Mr. Daniel Ndoh, who's the acting chief director, CRM and auxiliary services. And on my extreme left is Mr. Sandile Boy, who is the deputy director, human resource development. Our presentation will focus mainly on the internal training within the department. Then CITAS will cover a broader training in the energy space. Chairperson and committee members, we are mandated to ensure secure and sustainable provision of energy for social economic development. In terms of our mission, we are responsible to regulate and transform the sector for the provision of secure, sustainable, and affordable energy. Chair, we are hard at work in terms of our vision 2025 to improve our energy mix so that we have at least 50% of clean energy by 2025. In terms of strategic objectives of the department, we have the following: ensure energy security, achieve universal access, and transform the energy sector. We are responsible for regulating the energy sector, provide effective and efficient service delivery, optimal utilization of energy resources, ensure sustainable development, enhance the culture, systems, and people, and also promote corporate governance. Chair, within the department, we have identified the following training needs that is in consultation with different branches. One being the energy efficiency management, renewable energy technology, nuclear engineering, economic analysis, energy sector statistics, advanced statistical analysis, energy modeling and analysis, substation and electrification design, advanced management development program, project CAED, which is offered by School of Government, as well as legislative drafting. Imaging management development program, project management, mentoring and coaching, BID education committee, leadership development program, presentation skills, first aid for the department, project management learnerships, public administration learnerships, AET program, which is the adult education and training program, leader writing. Then, Chair, in terms of the identified training requirements, we have managed to fulfill the following. In terms of energy efficiency, we were able to train at least six officials. And we also highlighted the gender, the male and female. Substation maintenance, reliability and operations, 12, grab 17, 3. Radiation and environment, 2. Shale gas exploration and technology and environment, introduction to petroleum industry. We've also provided training on advanced certificate in management for oil and gas, which is sponsored by the SAPIA, which is the South African Petroleum Industry Association. We've also provided training on the environmental impact assessment as well as the energy. One colleague attended the energy law course. We've also provided 34 officials with advanced project management training, 11 for advanced management development program. Management advice program 1, program in project management 10, basic project management 8, user starting skills 7, CCTV control room 1. Champ indicates that here is really for officials who are assisting us to protect the property of the department. So the chairman is one thing that we are now in the business of surveillance camera, but it's really to ensure that our building is secure. And we have officials who are responsible for this in here. Contract management, demand side management 2, imaging management development program 3, financial management 3, page 844, risk management 3. Implementation of the promotion of access to information and funds. In terms of executive drafting, four colleagues attend the training, mentor and coaching 17, minutes taking 1, call on Microsoft Excel Advanced 24, Microsoft Project 2, organizational design 3. PSMA and BID Adjudication Committee 10, Presentation Skills 15, Application of Policy and Procedures on Incapacity Leave and Ill Health Retirement in the Public Service. We have 44 colleagues that have been exposed to this training course. Departmental induction, which is offered to new employees who join the department, we've done 117. Compulsory induction program, it is offered by School of Government, 43 officials attended. So, Chair, all in all, we've offered training to 463 officials out of 528. I spoke earlier on about the EU-Ethiopia partnership, and the colleagues that graduated last month on the 18th of the month. We also allowed colleagues to attend the sort of training workshops or and conferences. Get the game changer for South Africa. We had one official, nuclear power project, 5 officials, Africa Refining Summit, 3 officials, Women in Energy Africa, 4, Africa Energy Nava, 4, Legislative Compliance Standard Process 9, Shale Gas Conference, 3. The 17th South African Internal Audit, we had 4 colleagues attending from the Internal Audit Unit. 5th Annual Rural Development 1, Advanced Strategic Development and Implementation 1, Africa Disability, HIV and AIDS 1 official. Amendment of the Employment Equity Act, we had 1 colleague attending at this one. CIA Learning Systems, 1 colleague attended. We also subjected the senior management to a course that deals with the media. Out of 84 attended this training. We also offered HR standards rolled out by SAPP. Implementing expanded public works projects to official public sector trainers forum 4. The asset management and disposal, 1 official, as well as the national development plan in our own government-wide integrated national plan. Design, now this is the design direction operation of EHV substation. We had 1 colleague attending, 1 on power purchase agreement, we had 1 colleague attending. This is mainly on the this independent power producers, we had a colleague attending a training course on power purchase agreement. Shell DOE scenarios, with 3 officials attending. Others, Africa Forage and Logistics 2, Renewable Micro and Hydro Power 1. 22nd Women in New Zealand Global Conference 2, the 10th Regional Workshop Training 2, New Human Development Exchange Program 2, IEA Energy Statistics Training. IEA is the International Energy Agency. They offer the training to two colleagues. Civil Nuclear Energy, three. And in terms of financial implications, Chairperson and Committee members, the training budget for 2014 financial year is 5.6 million. Training expenditure to date is 3 million. Bursaries expenditure to date to permanent employees is 559,000. Then we have levy payments to CETA. CETA is 372,000. EWS is 372,000. PCA is 68,000. In terms of bursaries offered to permanent employees within the department, we have the following categories or studies. Human resource and social science, 8, security management, 3, public management and administration, 17, energy studies, 7, economic accounting and auditing, 15, law studies, 9, transport and fleet management, 4, supply chain management, 1, MBA, 5, project management, 5, electrical engineering, 1, policy studies, 1. So if I may move on now to youth development programs for the current financial year 2014-15. We have a long-standing agreement with the Malaysian to really assist us to bridge the gap in terms of skills. This joint venture was entered into in 1999. Currently there are two students that are participating in the scholarship program, which is sponsored by DOE and Petronas. Petronas being the National Oil Company in Malaysia, in the Malaysian government. Students in this program are expected not only to learn theoretical knowledge, but also do practical work in terms of industrial internships prior to the completion of their studies. I must indicate that since the inception of this program, 89 students graduated from Malaysian scholarship program in the following study areas: IT, chemical engineering, electrical engineering, petroleum geoscience, and civil engineering. Youth development program for 2013-14 leadership and internship programs. As a department, we have implemented the following programs. 12 learners in the public administration learnership, which comprises of 7 employees and 5 unemployed. This program is completed. 20 learners in project management, 10 employees, 10 unemployed. Learners in internal audit learnership, 6 that are employed and 5 that are unemployed. The program is not complete as it is a 2-year program. And this will be completed in June this year. 5 students offered bursaries to study chemical engineering. Students still continuing and expected year of completion is 2017. The department also appointed 27 interns. 2 interns were youth with disabilities. 13 interns were permanently employed. 2 out of 13 were employed on contract position basis by the department. And 6 interns were appointed in a permanent position. 5 interns were employed by other entities and government departments. Youth development programs for 2013-14 leadership in an internship program. In terms of public administration, we had 4 females that were offered training, 1 male and 1 official with disability. Unemployed, 5 females, 2 male, and project management, 6 females, 4 males, and 1 with disability. Internal audit, 3, 2, and internship 18 and 9. Just to share with you, we also have learnership program, which is a structured learning. It combines both theoretical learning and practical workplace integrated learning. And it's a 12-month program. We target unemployed South African youth seeking qualifications which will, at the end, lift them to become employable. Currently, 19 learners are participating in this learnership program, which is funded by CHIFA in public administration and internal audit. In terms of gender, public administration, 12 females, 3 males, and 1 with disability. It's an audit, two females and two males. 200 learners were appointed within the department. One unemployed learner appointed permanently, but outside of the department. Two unemployed disabled learners were appointed permanently within the department. Five unemployed learners were appointed on a contract basis within the department. Now, move on to the internal bursary program for 2014-15. Chair, the department currently have a 13 bursaries who are funded by CHISA, who are studying towards chemical engineering in different tertiary institutions of higher learning. 13 bursaries will continue with their studies in the 2016 academic year, in other words, the aid funding for it. In terms of 2014-15 internship program, we have 32 interns, two are interns with disabilities, and the other two interns are placed at Botswana, South Africa. They are pursuing practical work based in chemical engineering. This program is ending this month on the 31st of March. We have 12 females, 12 males, and two with disabilities. To date, the department has 24 interns. Eight interns have been employed in different public and private sectors. The two interns will be starting on the 1st of April, and two interns will, with disabilities are targeted to be part of the same team. In terms of our planned development program for 2015-16 financial year, we have the following chapters. Five project management leadership program for two employees as well as three youth that we are targeting. 10 public administration learnership programs, there's 5 employees targeted and 5 youth targeted. 5 work integrated learning in chemical engineering, SCM, ICT, and finance. Chair, we have our own state-owned entities, and we work jointly with them in terms of human resource development program. We have an HRC forum comprising these state-owned entities that report to the minister. The purpose of this HRC forum, Chair, is basically to work together with the energy sector to promote and share social economic skills based on the broader energy sector at large. And these are NEXA, CEF, CANADI, NERSA, FSA, and the NNR. The HRC Forum creates a platform for negotiation and representation to state-held institutions of higher learning as well as international and local funding. It also makes input to either the state and CHISA for 2014 skills plan review and update. It also participates in exchange of ideas, benchmark HRC needs, skill development trends, and information. In terms of international partnership, the department participates in all IAE nuclear energy related training programs and workshops. IAE is the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is an intergovernmental body that focuses on research and technical work. The Department of Energy has a partnership through bilateral agreements on human capital development with regional donors such as Malaysia, which I've just mentioned earlier on, Australia, China, Qatar, Korea, India, France, Indonesia, Japan, Asia, USA, and Germany. In the current financial year, the Department approved for 19 officials to attend workshops, seminars, and training courses funded by this international donor. Donor funded opportunities are shared with other role players in the country, such as our utility ESCOM, NETRAN, the Department of Trade and Technology, Department of Public Enterprises, and Department of Trade and Industry. This is just one of the training that was offered internationally last year in September on renewable energy. Now, in terms of if I may carry on in terms of international partnership, Jefferson, we have what you call a King's Nuclear Scholarship Program. King's basically is a CAPCO International Nuclear Graduate School in Basel. this exchange program forms part of the third development initiative of the South African government to enhance capabilities on the nuclear sector, especially in the context of the integrated IRP, integrated resource plan, sorry, of 2010. Within this exchange program, SANHEP students, SANHEP is the South African Nuclear Human Asset and Research Program. We these students, some of them will be returning, basically have returned in South Africa last month. That is after graduating. In addition, three students employed in primary schools by NEXA, Department for the budget for the same program on 20 February 2015. The 17th of February 2015, the Department of Energy, together with the Department of Science and Technology, NEXA, and NRF, hosted an induction and orientation program for students who will be starting the same degree in 2015. These are some of the students that have been subjected to this King's Mentor Scholarship Program. In terms of China Nuclear Training Program, the South African government and Chinese government, it has recommended that State Nuclear Power Technology Corporation of China must enter into an agreement with the South African Nuclear Power Corporation so that we have learners participating in the nuclear power project, mainly to promote the advanced passive Gen 3 nuclear power technology. The Department of Energy and NEXA will be training 50 South Africans on the China nuclear program. The 50 trainees, that is 19 females and 21 males, are from the Department of Energy, National Nuclear Regulator, ESCOM, NEXA, Kuha Development Corporation, and the Department of Economic Development, Environmental Affairs and Tourism, as well as Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality. Here, the training will take place in April, and it will end in August 2015. In terms of participation in CITAS activities, which our colleagues from CITAS will elaborate in detail, the department has appointed representatives on the EWCITA and CITA government board. Four officials of the Department of Energy are participating in the following CITA board subcommittees, namely Learning Programs Committee, Leadership Committee, Skills Planning Committee, and Quality Assurance Committee. Three officials of the department are members of the CITA board, Chamber, Base, Simcals, and Petroleum. The department has submitted the 2014-15 workplace skills plan, annual training report to CITA, EW, CITA, and CHITA. We've also submitted the HRD strategy framework and implementation report to the Department of Public Service and Administration for 2014 and 15. In terms of approved funding, CHITA has approved the following professional grants to be implemented in the ensuing financial year. 5 project management learnership, 10 public administration learnership, 10 bursaries, 5 were integrated learning. The CHITA approved $1 million to implement the above-mentioned programs. In terms of data, research and professional grant applications, in 2014, the department applied for the following discretionary grants: work integrated learning in electrical engineering for 50 students, solar water, 600 trainees, bursaries, 10 students. In July 2014, the department applied for the following discretionary grants: 5 students for bursaries in LA studies, 5 students for bursaries in nuclear science and psychology, 5 learners in AET, 75 mentorship, 50 students for work integrated learning. The department is still awaiting feedback in regard to that. In January 2015, the department applied for the following special grants: 5 public administration learnership, that is NQF level 6, 10 public administration learnership, NQF level 5. And again, we are still waiting for feedback. Chair President and committee members, thank you very much.
Thank you. thank you for that presentation.
We have to think about it. A lot of the idea of having both the minister and the deputy minister here and the minister of higher education training, it's a good idea that we must think about and pursue. When the representatives here have been making their presentation, will come back. I just want to comment, having listened to the first conversation, it's an important discussion we should have with the Prime Minister at this stage. And I mean just at a strategic level about the landscape in the energy sector, the challenges we face, and how what plans we have to respond to those challenges in the short term and long term. That's an issue that I think is important to attend to. So let not be not clear place of questions and that is. Mrs. Moody, are you making the presentation?
I am, Chair, yes, thank you.
Okay. I'm sure you can now you're ready to make the presentation and you can introduce the members of your delegation.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, honourable members. If I may introduce our board member, Mr. Mercy DiCarlo, who will introduce the panel in front of you.
Thank you. My name is Mrs. Kanu. I'm the member of the board of EWCT. With me, I have the executive of EWCT, Ms. Candice Mokli, who is the executive corporate, Ms. Solo Felomkote, who is the acting CEO, Ms. Catherine Kuriana, who is the acting CFO, Sarah Zenando, who is the governance and strategic manager. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. In terms of the contents, Chair and honourable members, we will systematically go through the various points that were raised in the letter that was submitted to us to address. There are quite a few slides on our slide deck, so I apologise for that. I won't therefore delve into too much detail per slide because I do believe you have the printouts in front of you. I'm not sure, Chair, if we then keep all the questions to the Q&A part of it. I don't need to stop my presentation at any point. Great. So thanks for the opportunity. The EW Theatre, as you know, is one of 21 theatres legislated to manage skill development and training within our country. EWC specifically is mandated to manage the skills development needs of the energy and water services sector. And we do those through the strategic skills planning within the framework of the National Skills Development Strategy, or the NSDS3. The occupational coverage of the EWC includes water, gas, and electricity. And for those who might want to know, our subsectors for energy include electricity, nuclear, gas, and renewable energy. In terms of the electricity sector in South Africa, it is dominated by the National Utility, which is Eskom, which owns and operates most of the national electricity generation. We're looking at about 95% of the country's electricity requirements are catered for by Eskom. However, the small balance, the 5%, is split between municipalities and distributors, as well as private generators, which at this point is only 1%. The gas sector in South Africa is relatively small, with many of the big firms mainly involved in wholesaling and the retailing of gas. In terms of our sector, there's approximately 129,592 people working in the energy and water sector in South Africa. These stats, one must realize, comes from our SSP data that we collect and that we analyze on an annual basis. There are 91,115 people working in the electricity sector, 33,223 in water, and about 5,000 in the gas sector. The energy and water sector comprises 0.9% of the total labor force in the country. Virtually all employees are in the formal sector. There are only a mere 3,000 odd employees in the informal sector. And basically what this means is that these employees are accessible for training because employers are within the formal sector. 5% of the workforce in the energy and water sector has up to primary level education, 50% up to secondary level, and 45% of employees have completed tertiary education. This is, of course, relatively high compared to other economic sectors. The secondary and tertiary levels collectively make up 95% of the sector's workforce. In terms of the CETA structure itself, many of you know that we have gone through some turbulent times. There has been a historic lack of alignment between our organizational, strategic, and governance requirements, and hence we went through a restructuring process very recently, and that new structure was approved by our board in 2013. We've moved from predominantly what was a sector-based structure to a more value chain-driven structure that allows us now to serve our stakeholders better and really deal with the sector needs in a holistic manner. Of course, the restructuring also includes the opening of regional office, with our first regional office now operational in the Western Cape. The size of EWC's revenue is relative to the demand of skills in the sector is relatively small, actually, and necessitates that we partner with technical and vocational education and training, or DVET colleges, to meet intermediate skills needs and universities for the high skills needs. The implementation of structural changes is also affected by having to keep our administrative costs to an effect of 10.5% of the annual budget. The revised organizational structure, therefore, although increased in terms of capacity, will be implemented in a phased approach, with the initial focus on areas within the structure aimed at increasing revenue streams. Our total budget for 2015-16 is $229,210,000. The energy, as I mentioned, it is small. I won't touch on the first two bullet points. However, when it comes to where we're experiencing the greatest shortages, it's definitely in qualified, experienced, and registered engineers. The shortage of engineers and artisans are resulting in deteriorating water and energy infrastructure. Therefore, EWC needs to play a very prominent role, particularly in the SIPs, which is your strategic integrated projects, which I'll touch on a bit later. And with our focus there, we hope to expand the access to water and energy and also support green skills development. The scale of infrastructure challenges ahead requires skilled people in a number of occupations identified on our scarce skills list, which you'll find in our SSP. In the next slide, we'll only touch on the main scarce skills. Many of these challenges can be addressed through the strategic infrastructure partnerships that we have been engaged on and trying to submit. These are the most critical and scarce skills that we have identified within the sector. You've got your water quality analyst, civil engineers, environmental engineer, electrical engineer, energy engineer, solar installers, and electricians. How are we addressing these? Currently, mainly through bursaries, as well as learnerships and apprenticeships. When you look at the number and types of skills, it's probably a good point at this stage to look at the primary energy mix that we've analysed. When you look at the urban versus rural, particularly in South Africa, you'll find that, for instance, households are still using predominantly electricity for cooking, whereas rural, yes, electricity is still the largest energy source, but there's quite a big component of straw and other waste and fuel wood energy being used in those households. So therefore, we do need to concentrate predominantly on the electricity, but also start looking at your natural resources and renewable energy sources. In terms of the Sub-Saharan Africa primary energy mix, when you look at South Africa compared to the other Sub-Saharan countries, you'll still see that predominantly coal is the primary energy there. However, there's oil is becoming quite a big component to what we have, as well as bioenergy. Whereas in the other Sub-Saharan countries, you'll find that bioenergy is probably the most dominant there. Therefore, we do need to focus more on what we're doing in terms of bioenergy skills development and training, and also dealing with oil and gas, which is a sector that we want to penetrate quite aggressively going forward. Potential direct employment, particularly in green jobs, in the short term, when we say short term, we mean to 2017, you're looking at natural resource management providing the most direct employment in terms of green jobs, just under 50,000, energy and resource efficiency, just over 30,000, with energy generation coming in at around 15,000, and emissions and pollution mitigation, quite a bit less. In the long term, 2025 is our forecast. Natural resource management definitely increasing to probably around 240,000 potential jobs. Energy generation also quite high. You're looking at about 102,000 up there. So those graphs will really inform our strategy going forward in terms of what we as a CETA need to do. In terms of placement of these fields and working relationships with industry and government, the Department of Energy has touched on a few initiatives that we have with them and how they work with us at a CETA. Yes, they sit on some of our committees, etc. But we're also part of the Department of Energy Human Resource Development Forum. We've completed EWC to funded work integrated learning for city graduates in electrical engineering. All graduates were subsequently placed at the Department of Energy. Currently, the Department of Energy requested funding to place 50 graduates. And notwithstanding, hopefully, budget will allow, it will be recommended for funding. There are various other projects that are sitting at EWC from Department of Energy that is going through the necessary processes of evaluation. We definitely have a meeting in the pipeline between EWC and DOE to discuss various partnerships on our projects, including the China State Nuclear Power Technology Corporation project that was mentioned, as well as Nuclear Energy Training Program, Nexus Nuclear Training Academy, and the Nexus-EWC Collaborative Agreement, which we need to put into place. We have a very strong relationship with the Northern Cape Provincial Government. We've signed a collaborative agreement with the Office of the Premier to support the Northern Cape Provincial Growth Development Strategy. The third level agreement was signed with the Provincial Government and two Northern Cape TVET colleges, both the rural and urban TVET colleges, for the establishment of the Renewable Energy Centre of Excellence. The purpose of REEC is the following: localization of solar technology and development of the necessary skills that renewable energy industry require. A source of skills to ensure that direct employment is supported locally, ensure a sufficient pool of skills for the establishment of local manufacturing capabilities and sustainment of SMEs, job opportunities created to operationalize REEC, and research and development in renewable energy. In terms of our relationship and partnership with the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, there is a collaborative agreement signed with the Office of the Premier to support the Eastern Cape Provincial Growth Development Strategy, which will, amongst others, include various projects in the energy sector, particularly focusing on the rural communities. In their district municipality, there's a citizen-level agreement signed with the Bembe District Municipality. We have two interventions with them currently. 25 unemployed learners are supported on electrical engineering and 25 on chemical engineering learnership. In terms of all our learnerships, we do put focus predominantly on youth, as well as people from disadvantaged backgrounds, as well as women and disabled as much as possible. At Tanzania District Municipality, there's a service level agreement signed to support 60 learners on electrical engineering and 60 on mechanical engineering, both are learnerships. Rustenburg Municipality is an SLA signed to support 15 unemployed learners on electrical engineering. We have a very vibrant project with TIA, Technology Innovation Agency. 60 students participated in an internship program. 72% of those, that's 43, were successfully placed. They gained employment at the end of this. TIA requested further support for city graduates, and once again is going through the evaluation process and budget permitting will be recommended for funding. In terms of technical vocational education and training, or TVET colleges, we have a number of partnerships and collaborative agreements with TVET colleges around the country. Over TVET, for instance, 120 have been funded on work integrated learning in electrical engineering, 60 unemployed learners on electrical engineering. Sekune TVET, 60 unemployed learners on electrical engineering learnership to be placed on work integrated learning. For Salela TVET, 90 unemployed learners on electrical engineering, 50 unemployed learners on electrical engineering, it's an artisanship program, will be placed for WOL. College of Cape Town, 60 students funded on WOL, and WOL being work integrated learning in electrical engineering, 180 supported in electrical engineering bursaries, and 150 on electrical infrastructure construction bursaries. 150 FET educators supported on capacity building skills programs. For Capricorn TVET, 60 students on electrical engineering learnerships to be placed on WOL. East Cape Midlands TVET, an SLA has been signed to fund a refurbishment of the Green Technology Centre, as well as the renewable energy training equipment that they require. West Coast TVET, they have 75 students supported in the Renewable Energy System Design Skills Program, 75 supported in electrical engineering learnership, and 75 supported on Artisan Development Program in electrical engineering. South Cape TVET, 50 students supported on the Electrical Engineering World Program. In terms of the higher education institutes, we have a number of collaborative agreements signed with universities. There are a few major objectives, but one is to equip students with experiential learning. We have partnerships and collaborative engagements with the University of Johannesburg, University of Stellenbosch, Nelson Mandela Municipal University, pardon me, that's for the development of advanced diploma in renewable energy. The first two institutions predominantly around research in water and energy. Cape Peninsula University of Technology, the University of Limpopo, Durban University of Technology, we have an SLA signed for the establishment of clean energy education and empowerment mobile training and development unit. The unit will be offering short courses on installation and maintenance of solar water heaters, equipment demonstrating how solar energy works, and to make school pupils aware of alternative and renewable energy, address marketing and branding of products from DUTs, including energy-related offerings, and to address community engagement programs, of which some respond to the energy sector. We have a number of partnerships with civil society organizations. The South African National Apex Cooperative, SANACO, we have a collaborative agreement that was signed with them in 2013. That was followed with an SLA that has been signed to implement phase two of a project involving 175 unemployed learners and 50 cooperatives in all the provinces, excluding Gauteng and Western Cape. The project has an N2F2 learnership on electrical engineering. Ibuku Investments, 500 military veterans supported in the solar heating installation skills program. And Vadejo, 350 unemployed youth in the Northwest supported in the solar heating installation skills program. Kata Management Services, 100 unemployed youth in Gauteng supported in the electrical engineering learning program. The West Rand Youth Development, we've got 100 unemployed youth in Gauteng Province supported to participate in solar heating installation skills program. And then there's the Desmond Tutu Leadership Center, 100 unemployed youth in the Mpumalanga Province to participate in the solar water heater installation skills program. Many of these projects, most of them cut across both energy and water. We're only obviously for this engagement mentioning the energy component of projects. Elders Women in Bogota, 50 unemployed youth supported to participate in the Electrical Engineering National Certificational Program, 20 unemployed youth supported to participate in the Electrical Engineering Artisan Program. We also have a graduate placement program here in the Western Cape for 10 graduates to be supported and placed on electrical engineering work integrated learning. At this stage, I also want to mention, although it's not in the presentation, we also have vibrant projects that we're also doing from an intercesa perspective. For instance, our intercesa colleagues, we have a joint program with them at Falls Bay College for 250 learners on solar geyser installation, which we're implementing. In terms of what gaps of skills to serve the energy sector has the CETA identified, including key and critical skills, and what is currently being done at the CETA to address this. Though we found that one of the major problems currently in South Africa's skills development environment is that the identification of scarce skills does not appear to be supported by much factual evidence-led inquiry. Thus, the nature of skills needs and the quantum skills imbalance within the labour market are often misdiagnosed, misunderstood, or mistreated. The following change drivers in the energy sector were identified. Definitely renewable energy and the renewable energy strategy. Green issues, skill shortages in electricity management and civil engineering. Strategic integrated projects are definitely driving skill development landscape and unemployment. The President launched the strategic integrated projects. As you know, there are 18 steps, of which three energy SIPs are that we are responding to particularly. And those are SIP 8, which talks to green energy in support of the South African economy. SIP 9, electricity generation in support of socio-economic development. And SIP 10, electricity transmission and distribution for all. Through extensive research done by the Department of Higher Education and Training and the SIP staff teams, the skills gaps have been identified and six occupation categories were identified as key drivers of the SIPs. And as CETAs, we are responding as best we can to these particular occupation categories. The first being professionals and associate professionals. The second, clerical and support workers. Trades in brackets, artisans, probably being our main focus. As you know, the greatest occupational demand of SIPs is trade. The current artisans in the labour market will need to be replaced by the year 2020 as they are ageing. Addressing the projected shortfall of artisans has now become a national priority and definitely a priority in our strategic focus as EWCETA. The medium-term strategic framework 2014 to 2020 has brought forward the national development plan target of 30,000 qualified artisans per annum from 2030 to 2026. Therefore, the 13,000 that we produce on an annual basis has to pretty much double on an annual basis to meet that target. Next occupational category, operators. And the last, elementary occupations. Elementary and non-trade production workers, for instance, cover occupations which requires elementary knowledge and experience to perform routine tasks using hand tools and considerable physical effort. I mentioned that as well. This is actually the last, sorry, and also a very key focus for us, managers. The public service is responsible for the macro socio-economic policy making on infrastructure and the architect of an enabling environment for national development. Public service management covers such aspects of management as productivity management, professional and technical management of human, financial and other resources. Thus, developing management capacity requires more than just the attendance of one or two short courses. It requires dedicated focus and long-term plans. In terms of building a capable state, management in the public sector must be strengthened. The EWC has responded to the DHET call for commitments to the priorities and will be placing strategic focus on the funding of learning programs that respond to these priorities throughout the skills plan and discretionary funding processes. The development of occupational qualifications that are on the critical scarce skills list is also a key focus for EWC at this point in time and allows us to address some of the skills gaps. The two that we're working on particularly are the energy audit technician and energy management advisor. There's continuous collaboration with higher education institutions for curricular development. For instance, the EWC and MMU development of an advanced diploma in renewable energy. I mentioned the Renewable Energy Center of Excellence that was established. It is responding to the skills needs for alternative energy And we've launched the RePlenter in Upington in the Northern Cape Province in August last year. Green Skills Development Strategy is one that we've developed for the CETA. And South Africa has embarked on a major policy drive to invest in a green economy within the overall concept of sustainable development. Green economy refers to a market economy system that is orientated towards ecological sustainability, economic profitability, and social inclusion. And this is what we've addressed in our Green Skills Development Strategy. The green economy has the potential to be a new engine of growth, as I've shown in previous graphs, a net generator of decent jobs and a vital strategy to reduce poverty. South Africa's new growth path of 2010 identifies the green economy as one of the key sectors for employment creation in a potential, with a potential of creating 300,000 additional direct jobs by 2020. The skills development sector plays an essential role in the transition to the green economy. The aim of the strategy is to provide a coherent framework that supports the development of required skills for greening South Africa's energy sector. We're also playing a significant role in generating energy research with our partners. There's the Equitable Energy and Water for All baseline study that was conducted by through EWCETA with the University of Johannesburg. This is decentralizing energy production and service delivery, water, energy, sanitation, and waste management. Production and service delivery taps into the essence of the challenges facing South Africa as a country today. The study also strategically mitigates our energy poverty with service delivery and job creation as pillars that underpin this advancement of the socio-economic agenda to the benefit of all South Africans. And finally, creating pilot projects within areas with problematic supply risks, more specifically rural and urban spatial frameworks. Also, through partnering and funding the University of Johannesburg, we're looking at the prediction of future energy scenarios. We commissioned this study, which will be incorporated in the Northern Cape Strategic Intervention, with a particular focus on the Northern Cape province in the renewable energy and energy efficiency industry. This study details the current career pathway specific to South Africa, forecasts the skills demand up to 2030, and concludes with a skills development plan. Thus motivating relevant training of clear skills for the implementation of renewable energy and energy efficiency training programs within the local TVA colleges. We have a significant number of partnerships in place with TVA colleges. This is just at a very high level overview of the number we have in place and the regional and provincial spread of those partnerships. So this is just some of the TVA colleges that we have existing partnerships with. This list is growing on a daily basis, and there's quite a number that we can add to that. In terms of partnerships that we have with government agencies, as you can see, we are really wanting to target our key line departments, Department of Energy, Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Public Works, Department of Human Settlements, but we're also wanting to create sustainable partnerships with municipalities as well as various other government organizations. We put a lot of focus on strategic engagement with the with our new CEO. He has done phenomenally well in terms of strategically aligning the CETA with the real role players and stakeholders locally as well as internationally. Recently, the CEO visited Moscow with a particular mission on what can we do from a skills development and training perspective in terms of nuclear, which is a key driving for within energy currently. His visit to Rosatom produced many fruitful interventions as well as results, and we hope that we can take this engagement further. Rosatom, as you know, is an international world-renowned Russian state atomic energy corporation. In fact, Rosatom has extended no less than 20 state-funded scholarships for undergraduate and deserving South African students to study at their facility in Moscow. Currently, the CEO is in the Netherlands, and this is in line with our strategy to engage international partners to support and inform our skills development training initiatives. The stakeholders that will be engaged is SANEF, the South African Netherlands Chamber of Commerce, Codrilla, which is a leading company in natural gas exploration and hydraulic fracturing, IRO, the Association of Dutch Suppliers in Oil and Gas Industries, a counterpart here in South Africa would be the SEOGA, South African Oil and Gas Alliance. Members cover all activities involved in the supply industry, such as engineering, field development, pipeline installation, maintenance, manufacturing and material and equipment supply onshore as well as offshore. As I mentioned earlier, EWVITA wants to get into the oil and gas sector and play a more authoritative role in that sector. Thus, a lot of work is going into research on oil and gas. Wind energy solutions, as well as Shell. With Shell's plans to implement hydraulic fracturing in South Africa, a partnership needs to be finalized in terms of localizing skills requirements for the program. We do have a vibrant relationship with South African Oil and Gas Alliance. It is a public-private partnership with around 170 member companies. SERGA has established Marine Oil and Gas Academy, and it facilitates coordination of the various skills initiatives from industry, government, and training. We also plan to have a skills summit in Saldanha Bay later this month on the 17th and 18th of March, which we will host. It's the first skills summit that EWVITA will be hosting in Saldanha Bay, particularly because it is an economic hub for the oil and gas sector. It's also identified IDZ, and we do see our role as also supporting the broader economic plans and agendas of government, of which the IDZs and the SEZs are quite two very important programs. Finally, in addressing some of the challenges that we as a CETA face and how these could possibly be addressed or currently being addressed, the one critical challenge is definitely inadequate funding to carry out our mandate of skills development. The solution for that is that we have no choice but to engage both national and international partners to source the alternative funding that we do require so that we can do the impactful training and skills development that's needed in the energy sector. Another serious challenge is perhaps the misalignment of funds from employers in the energy and water sector, whose levies go to other sectors. For instance, some Mercy Theatre in water is LG Theatre, for instance. This really is high-level intervention from DHS or perhaps in this portfolio committee in terms of ensuring that fund allocation to sectors is correctly aligned. Access to workplaces for learners in industry is a big challenge because basically, industry and employers do not want to take on the responsibility for these learners. So that is a big stumbling block and a mountain that we have to overcome in all our engagements with industry. Thus, the sector collaboration branch has been formed within the structure of EWVITA, and through that branch is quite a bit of focus on industry partnerships geared towards work-integrated learning, internships, apprenticeships, etc. There's insufficient number of trained providers, particularly public providers offering energy qualifications. Thus, research is currently being conducted to inform our own EWVITA strategy, some of those research projects I have mentioned. Renewed focus on nuclear energy within South Africa. The challenge there is that at this point in time, very little qualifications exist. That from our side, we need to really fast-track some of the qualification development and our own qualification development strategy around nuclear. A challenge is scaling up of successful regional projects due to lack of funds. We have a number of really vibrant, impactful regional projects that are really making a difference to those regions that we can see having greater impact nationally, but we just do not have the funds to scale them up. Thus, we're trying to source the funds from strategic partners for national implementation of the successful regional projects. Delay implementation of approved projects by implementing agents is a big challenge for us. However, we hope to address that and have already been finding that it's alleviating some of the historic problems. Our internal project management unit to monitor and evaluate a project implementation. So now we're able to monitor, evaluate the projects, hold the implementers accountable where necessary, and move funds if there's no movement in the project to projects more deserving. Chair and honourable members, thank you very much. In conclusion, my conclusion is not coming up, but we do have a motto that we that we've adopted at the EWVITA, and that is, and it's really since our new CEO came in, this is what drives us as a CETA, this particular saying, is that greatness is not where we stand, but in what direction we are moving. We must sail, sometimes with the wind, sometimes against it, but sail we must, and not drift nor lie at anchor. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thank you very much for the we're ready now to take the next presentation. Thanks.
morning, Chairperson, honorable members, and colleagues from the outfitters, department officials, from higher education and from the energy sector. I have a colleague at the back, the COO, who refuses to come and hold my hand. So Wayne Adams, for the presentation, fine, Chair. You answer the question. I'll do the presentation. Chairperson...
Wait. COO, take your seat.
Once again, Chairperson, I represent the mercy to an apology from our Chairperson of the Board who's been with NASA and has now just moved over to Gauteng as DG there, and unfortunately is juggling between the two jobs and could not make this as she has got an engagement in Gauteng. So Ms. Baleni does send her apologies. Thank you. I'll start with our motto. And actually, if one looks at the presentation by the energy CETA and by the Department of Energy, it's very clear that MERS-CETA does not strategically fit into the realm of energy, but we sit within manufacturing. But at the same time, we have a motto that we care, we belong, and we serve. Now, caring is about people. People who render services to other people. Belonging is about working together in a team to achieve certain results. And we serve, it's going beyond the call of duty. I say this, Jay, because in us caring and us belonging, we belong to the seat of fraternity, and therefore has to support initiatives by fellow colleagues, and we're part of government at the same time. Serving is really going beyond that call of duty and looking sometimes at others, as I would elaborate in my presentation. Okay, I lost some of my other slides, I don't know. Okay, gotcha. Okay. I'll go straight on to it. Firstly, Mercy has five strategic priorities. And those priorities are firstly building a, let's get back to that. It's building a labor market and intelligence system, understanding why we have to do research. Secondly, it's about understanding our niche market, which is about artisan development. Now, developing the artisans is not only for the manufacturing sector, but for South Africa as a whole. Thirdly, it's about developing current workers within the sector to understand and comply with new technologies, for instance, the solar technology, and to look at the green economy. So looking at that, our strategic intent, Mercy is well placed to come and present to you today. Now, in terms of the Green Theta initiatives, Mercy has entered this particular platform, the Green Dialogue platform, which was created in September 2012. This was as a result of a position paper, resulted in a position paper in January 2030, to frame the Mercy's developmental approach to green skills with, and its focus on sustainability. A survey then on green skills activities, innovation, and technology in Mercy companies was conducted between July to November 2013. This was commissioned together with GIZ, the German corporation. We looked at occupational qualifications for developmental purposes for renewable energy, inclusive of wind, turbine, and solar, CV technicians for robotic technicians, 2013-2014. We also looked at participation in a range of local, national, and international forums to promote and standardize green initiatives, which started in 2012, as I said, with the Green Dialogue platform. We signed collaboration agreements on skills development, which focus on artisan and artisanal skills in the green economy, which started again in 2013. Therefore, our presentation is really about supporting the work that is done by the Department of Energy, the Energy Sector, as well as the Chemical Sector. Now, the Green Dialogue of this started in 2012 was actually a keynote address that looked at unleashing the future of developing sustainable skills to enhance innovation and productivity. We also looked at another one as the green economy that the above concept started to set the scene to form or to rather participate in Mercy Tech companies, both labor and communities, and how to engage them in the green economy. As I would explain, our companies are categorized from large, medium to small, and where this has been and what are the challenges that were experienced by these different companies. Now, the initial dialogue informed Mercy Tech's position specifically with regard to the National Development Plan 2030. That's why we had to look at this as a long-term plan. The Green Economy Accord, the White Paper Post-School Education and Training, NSDS3, the National Skills Development Strategy 3, the King 3 Code on Corporate Governance, in particular emphasizing, and I want to look at the first chapter of the King 3 report on corporate governance, we look at ethical leadership and corporate citizenship. Secondly, chapter 9 of the King 3 report, an integrated sustainable report. Now, here from our board's perspective, ethical leadership, the board is therefore responsible for ethical foundation, and the board should ensure that Mercy Tech should at all times be seen as a responsible corporate citizen. And therefore the whole notion of green skills in our manufacturing environment. We then shared we look at why a green strategy. Now, green strategy really comes from before embarking on any occupational qualification development and advocacy, it is important to understand what green status is in the industry. Then secondly, we looked at what is the approach of the survey. The green maturity model formed the basis of the survey. The model looked at three key inputs and two key outputs for manufacturing engineering, namely materials, water, energy inputs, and waste and emission of goods. Now we look at specifically what is the effect. The factors impact on how people across job levels are trained in terms of processes and technologies, and how training curricula can be designed to improve sustainable practices. What do the survey outcomes inform? The outcomes, therefore, members, was that the survey produced a 10.8% return rate. We therefore surveyed over 6,000 companies, and 664 companies responded to our questionnaire that informed our thinking on green skills. What are the outputs, therefore? As affected, large companies functioning on the international platform already started to implement significant green skills technology, inclusive of water and waste management. For instance, we run a project with a leading motor dealership, who then runs a management program with Stellenbosch University and Rhodes University. And this particular dealership, they had a couple of master's students that were looking at how energy efficiency could save its company, but also air back into the grid. Now that's the kind of programs we started getting involved in. And as I said, international companies, water-based things, for BMW and Mercedes-Benz that manufacture locally. It's because the German technology that is brought in South Africa, how do you train people who can enhance the particular strategy? With regard to medium and smaller companies, we find that they found it difficult to capitalize or finance the green skills initiative. It's too expensive, and therefore didn't participate very much in it. Smaller companies were mostly in survival mode and cared less about getting green and just wanted to pay for it. And in our case, Chairperson, the smaller companies who operate within townships and Manitoba. So this particular initiative is almost non-existent. Now the first step, the first step was to ensure occupational qualification development, advocacy, and research and development support, which already manifested itself by November 2014. Two QCGO renewable energy occupational qualifications for wind turbine service technician and solar PV technician are near completion. The Merseyside acted as a development equality partner in this particular case. The Merseyside's contribution also, I heard Energy Cedar referring to Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. We are quite involved in research and development, and not so much the qualification, but research and development with regard to green and renewable energy. Here we said renewable energy and new technology and development of the electrical car, and if you do watch this university participation, that particular car was right throughout South Africa and also participated in a competition in Germany where the students did very well, producing a car very locally in PV. We also looked at a solar power golf car, and if you get off on Cape Town Airport, you would notice there's a car that that transports workers, and it's got all these solar panels on. And this is the kind of car that we are just developing together with the students and the Department of Electrical Engineering at Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. Matisse's agreements were 2.6 million, was signed with the East London IDZ, which aligns to the Eastern Cape Sustainable Energy Strategy. The agreement includes training of first 20 electrical apprentices with an additional specialization in renewable energy. We also have that partnership with the Energy and Water Sector with Portray College, worth 20 million rand. It's an inter-CETA TRED agreement, which also contributes to community development in Kailicha and in Western Cape for solar geyser installations, 500 linnets, I think that's 230. A partnership between Merseyside and the British Council for the development of curriculum for solar heating and green awareness. This particular implementation was at North Wing TVET College in collaboration with Wendt College in the UK. Contract value here was 200,000. A Merseyside agreement worth 20 million with Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, which I referred to, which includes supporting research and development for renewable energy and new technology, development of the electric car as well as the solar car. Efficacy, we're looking at the GIZ partnering with them, the DHAT, the Department of Education and Training, the Department of Environmental Affairs, and we embarked on greening seabed colleges. Now this particular project also was done with Energy and Water Leader, which were co-opted to participate. We looked at selected TVET colleges across the country where we started looking at greening the TVET guide, which has been made, this particular guide was made available to the Merseyside Career Unit and our regional office, which we now give out to all career awareness. We also participated in the National Green Jobs Dialogue organized by the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Green Skills in Developing Countries during the World Skills Conference held in Leipzig 2 years ago, and it will continue this year again in Brazil. The Eastern Cape Green Forum is part of our Rolling Arts and Provinces Sustainable Green Strategy, a green workshop arranged by the Steel Engineering Industry Federation of South Africa, and we also participated in the Green Colloquium organized by CHICHA. Matisse is represented on the advisory board of the South African Renewable Energy Technology Center, SARITEC. SARITEC is based in the Belleville campus of Cape Peninsula University of Technology. Matisse and CPUT is exploring a pilot for wind turbine service technician occupational qualification, where SARITEC will act as the project coordinator. In the pipeline and way forward, we're looking at advocacy to include green skills, values in new occupational qualifications. Included in that is green skills sustainability collaboration agreement with MUSA in support of cooperatives. We do believe that to go to the smaller industries is to go cooperative route. and we can make an impact on small businesses that way. Before I conclude, just to note that our spend thus far for this financial year on artisan development is just over our discretionary grant is over 782 million and our mandatory grant is over 270 million rand. And this is targeted at training over 1,400 apprentices, over 5,000 learnership in artisan related fields. All of this training, as I said, but not exclusively for Mercedes, but for the economy and for the industries out there, which most of them get referred by Eskom and by the energy sector today. I thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Masita. You are 1 minute ahead of your time. The next presentation
The chair of the CHITA, who is Ms. Nolita Fakudi, who as you know is the second in charge of SAPTOL International, all our board members and all our stakeholders. They were very excited to know we are coming here today to talk to you about energy, oil and gas. With me I have in the team Mr. Bluebell supporter Trevor Tanning, very happy nowadays because they're winning. Our pilot supporter and youngest new executive member, Tribune Morawane, I've asked her permission to tell you her age. She's only 31, along with Chita and a deserving executive member. And obviously, let's wish the trophy as well today against Ireland. When I talk to you today, I'm going to be telling you about what Trevor usually says, hull, age and race. Take out and show. Show what you have done. I wanted to just start by telling you a little bit about who the CHITA is, although you've already asked and we've actually structured our slides according to your 7 questions, but sometimes people don't seem to understand that the chemical industry's CHITA actually looks after all the artisanal skills, so all the artisans, the engineering related skills, the mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, the environment issues are very key and critical to our sector as well, the green issues, and yes, Marisa was present at our colloquium 2 years ago. We do talk very well to each other and collaborate on the green side, and obviously also biofuels. If you look at the IFAC, you see I've mentioned the NDP. We are right in the middle of that, and we're going to show you all of that today. I will tell you why I think our CETA is as successful as it is. And I think that depends on 3 key factors, and all 3 of which we are proud to say are in place in CETA. The one is trust. trust from our stakeholders, all of them, employers, labor, government departments, and our learners, critical to us. Trust that when they're with us, they're going to get the best value for their money, for their time, for their effort. We have done what we have done as well as we have done because we have understood that our job here is to, together with all of us, answer to the vision of our government, and that is employment creation and looking after the youth of the country. And that is where we focus, and that's what we're going to take up and show you in a minute or two. The other very important thing to the Chita is that we do not plan and plan into infinity. We plan based on credible research. Our new skills planning mechanism is an electronic system which has given us information in real time, right now, on all the 156,000 workers in the chemical industry that are reported in the WSP's Workplace Skills Plan by name, by ID, by job, by region, all the demographics. So we know when we fund something where the gaps really are. We were able to put hard-earned money and the levy money from our company into real projects. So that is what I just wanted to start off with, and then we can proceed. Addressing the post-school challenge in South Africa, if you look at that picture, look from your left side on top on school leavers and what usually happens to them and what it is that we're trying to address. They might go into education, whether it's universities, and you see arrows going down, or they might go to FED colleges. A few will find jobs. Some go to private colleges at the bottom, but the sad part is many are still unemployed. And what is it that we are doing about that? And that is what we need to talk to you about today and show you the successes thus far at the Chemical CETA. You do have our slides with you. They have been given to you. Obviously, I'm not going to delve in detail to any, all of these slides, and you are very welcome to ask us questions afterwards. But you will see that the structure of our presentation is exactly as for the 7 questions you have asked. So the sector skills profile and the areas are covered in slides 6 to 16, and 17 to 21 covers the number and types of skills we produce. Slide 22 to 24 placement of skills in the marketplace and CETA working in relationship with industry and government. Slides 25 to 29, we're talking to you about the key and critical skills for the South African energy, oil and gas sector, and the CETA interventions, hard, presentable, real data to support to address the key and critical skills. And then the next three slides, 30 to 32, talk to our interventions in support and the preparation of South Africa to the new energy expansion program. And then we're talking to you about our challenges and how we are addressing them. Now, you know, everybody just looks at us and says, but you are slow. We say no. Operation Halkista has been in the CETA forever. Operation Halkista nationally is where we are now. And as Kiribone says to me, we should now talk about cow labor as well, and Sesha. So we are there. And Hoho, Mr. Hoho says here, quick, let's get it done. Our vision is of course world-class education and training for the chemical industry, because our industry is actually international. We are based all over the world. Whatever we do, whatever the world needs, I'm always happy to say, is based on chemistry and chemicals. So I think perhaps if government contemplates one CETA, it should be the chemical industry. Everybody else feeds in and gets off from us. So maybe that's just an aside. Our mission is to contribute to sustainable development by facilitating the vision of skills for the growth of the economic sector. And the mission and vision are founded on a value statement of stakeholder orientation, accountability, integrity, people, performance, and service excellence. And we are proud to say that last year we had our 13th consecutive unqualified financial audit. CETA overview, let's go on. Position of the CETA as a sustainable and value-added business partner to government and all of its stakeholders, and we move beyond the numbers and we demonstrate impact, which I will show you on my slides just now, on the socioeconomic imperatives of South Africa. We maintain and continuously improve our good corporate governance culture in dispersing our mandate, our grants, our monies, all of that. Sustain and continuous improvement of performance and service delivery to all stakeholders and to the country as a whole. And as I was saying, we have a sense now, we do have our own operations at ACISA, but we are very much in the playing field of national operations at ACISA. So which are our subsectors? We have five chambers made up, four groups are made up of combinations of two subsectors, and the last chamber right at the bottom is on its own. So energy, oil, gas, and base chemicals, the petroleum and base chemicals, chamber, on which, yes, the Department of Energy also serves, a very, very important stakeholder there. Fast-moving consumer goods and pharmaceuticals. Now, you will know that health is the second of the two identified initial areas of intervention of South Africa in Operation Patisa, maritime and health. So pharmaceutical industry is actually very much a player. It's one of our subsectors. We are looking at antiretrovirals, for example, about our toxicology and venue qualifications that we are developing. But today's presentation is all about the energy, oil, and gas. So I'm not going to go into those areas. Perhaps we'll be called to Parliament by the relevant portfolio committee another time. Explosives and fertilizers, specialty chemicals, surface coatings, and obviously the glass industry is our subsector. So CETA is made up of these subsectors. Our levies come from companies within these subsectors. Set a profile, our representation. From labor, we have CEPAW, we have the GIWUSA, General Industry Workers Union of South Africa, Solidarity, South African Chemical Workers Union, SACU, and UASA. Those are the five unions that are represented on our board. Employer organizations, very, very vibrant, participating, built trust with us over time, and they are the Surface Coatings Industries Employer Association, EA, Employer Association, obviously, National Fast-Moving Consumer Goods Explosive Industries Employment and Employers Association, the Glass Industries, National Chemicals, Fertilizers, Labor Affairs Association of Pharmaceuticals Industry, the National Base Chemicals Employers Association, and NPEA, the National Petroleum Employers Association. The government departments, DTI, Department of Energy, DST, Department of Environment Affairs, and public-owned companies and critical interest groups, next are very big. We're already beginning to develop required skills. You must know we're in the skills work. For NECTA, they are with us, they work very hard with us, bursaries given to them, lots and lots of money. You have in front of you already, I'm sure, our last year's annual report, and a lot of detail you're going to find in there as well. Second essay, SAPIA. And SAPIA was mentioned, I think, by the Energy CETA, South African Petroleum Industries Association. We have been working with them for the last 8 years, very closely and even closer now, funding their skills development, hearing them out in terms of what are the scarce skills in this country, how to develop new qualifications. South Africa never had a master's in petroleum engineering and an honors qualification until 2 years ago, when together with SAPIA and the universities, we partnered to develop those qualifications, not from scratch, but to take best practice that's happening all over the world, bringing it here, South Africanizing it, and getting it going. South African Oil and Gas Association, I think the news that is here, we will leave it there. You will see mention made of the CETA and the kind of relationships we already have with SAUKA, the LP Gas Association, and all the other gas-related associations. For gas, we have developed gas installer qualification, we have learned the learnings already, we fund it, and we've also developed and just given to the QCCO the gas practitioner qualification, because that subsector really doesn't leave us in field. Comes and wants things that we give to them, and I think actually maybe you should talk to them yourself to see how happy they are with the kind of cooperation. in terms of the levy grant system and the workplace skills plan submitted, and we're only talking oil and gas at the moment. I'm going to give you the details, and then I'm going to tell you about the specific sector we're talking about today. So the year 2011-12, the heavy paying companies offered a power of 1,542, and you can see they've been growing year after year. When I talk about trust, and when I talk about excellent delivery, you don't get companies moving to you, leaving another CETA, or somebody that has not ever been with the CETA, telling about you and coming to you if you haven't been doing well for them. So 2012-13-1785 companies, 2013-14-1924, these are the ones that submitted WSEs to us. And so you'll see the next column shows you the continuing increase in the number of submissions, percentage of levy payers, there you have them, employment status in the organization that submitted WSEs, how many people are these WSEs representing? And you can see in 13-14, 131,944 workers were represented. Understand, please, that not every company submits WSEs, because the smaller ones are not mandated to. If you've got your turnover is within 500,000, so you're not mandated to. However, then, estimated total employment in the sector is 157,992. And then the employees in the sector represented by the WSP, 84% of employees are represented. You can see here the voices of what the companies need, what kinds of skills they need, and 84% of the workforce is covered. This is an important slide. So there are 195 leading companies in the petroleum sector. They constitute only 10% of all leading companies within the chemical industry. However, petroleum industry contributes 45% of the CETA levy. So they're worth up. They're worth enough, and they're ours. At current value, this is 206 million rand. The petroleum industry currently employs 45,473 employees. If we look at the previous slide, you see there 157. 45,500 of those are from the petroleum industry. Employment in the petroleum subsector constitutes 29% of the total employment in chemical sector. So the key industry with us is petroleum, oil and gas. Working with us, have been part of us since our inception, and before, when we were the industry training board before CETA was set up, they were in our space. You asked us to show you information about the profile of the energy, oil and gas subsector. If you look at the number of the gender distribution of employees, there they are. I'm not going to read them, but I'll give you a minute to look through them. You will notice that this is really quite a male-dominated environment, and we're trying very, very hard to change that. We've already funded a leadership program in oil and gas, 2 SAPIA, 60 young women, and another 60 black women, to be able to make them, to assist them to become managers, because that's what we need in the sector, more and more of that as well. Number of women in black for occupational group, and you must know, this comes out of that SSP sector skill plan that we've given to you. That sector skill plan, the information, is actually based on credible data, that data that I spoke to you about in my opening, where from a company's human resource development desk, we get information. Our WSEs for the last 4 years are no longer some suck WSEs as they were. They're based on hard data directly from companies that we can verify at any moment, and that we do. So based on that, these are the figures that we can show you. The number of women across all professions, and these professions are actually as per the OFO code, Organizing Framework of Occupation Code. Managers, professionals, technicians and associates, professionals, dental workers and so on. The biggest concentration, if you look at it, is in the middle sector. That is the clerical and support workers, technician and associate professors, skilled and related trade workers. and those are where the artisanal skills are also based. Plant and machine operators and assemblers, 5,582 black people. Women, 485. And I'm not sure if you know that the Chita ran the artisan skills competition in 2013. We did invite other chitas to participate. I don't know that they were ready, they didn't, but anyway, we went ahead. And electrical skill was one of the skills, and two others, but the electrical skills people really, really wiped out everybody else. Amazing the level of competency, because that's what we need in the chemical industry. Gas and safety, important issues. Those people need to be able to weld under a gas pipe without blowing it up. So, excellence is very important in the chemical industry. People with disabilities, we're working very hard on this one. The real data is that 402 people at the moment, this is our last year. This year we've worked very hard with our companies, and if we report next year, we're going to see the figures looking like 1.7%, I think, and climbing. Provincial distribution of the employees within the energy, oil and gas sector. You can see the concentration is mainly urban. Free State is big there because Sasol is based in Sasolburg there. Housing generally also quite big. KwaZulu-Natal, again, all the petroleum companies are based there. And then Mpumalanga, big because of Secunda and other such entities. Western Cape is also with Chevron and BP and all the companies that we work with here. Age distribution. An interesting slide again. From that 54 year onwards is where we must be careful now and look for replacement skills, because people are going to go into retirement. Luckily, 55 to 59 and up to 60 and older is 6,200 people. But we are doing everything we can to replace those skills, and we've really got a mentoring program going where the outgoing people are mentoring actors on the floor to be able to bring them up to speed. In fact, what the Chita has done is we've put up a database of retired artisans, because they are tired, but they haven't lost their minds, they still know what they're doing. We're going to be bringing them on board to say, here are our youngsters, mentor them, bring them up to speed, so that they can come as we want them, not as they want. So we will be able to identify what is needed for industry and give that support to the youth of our country. The highest educational qualification of employees, another very important slide. You will find that in the chemical industry sector, we have most of our workforce at the higher level. Not so many at the lower level, because the nature of the industry and the maths and science requirements and the difficulty they. And actually, we are doing a great deal already about the maths and science side, because for people to enter our industry, we need to have funding windows for that. And within the rural areas, in the Limpopo, in the Northern Cape, in the Northwest, Eastern Cape, big projects running on maths and science for school years, grade 10, 11, and 12. And one of our companies, Safref in KZN, they've got also a program funded by the Chita where they're taking standard 8th grade 10th on board, giving them bursaries, giving them workplace exposure now already, so they can understand what the industry is and it can help them to make those career choices. And it's really, really working very well. Operational distribution of employees, you can see there the biggest ones are technicians and associate professionals. So 11,903, that's all the artisan related and post-matric level technical related skills, and 45,473 employees are together recorded in those categories. Status and impact of Chita skills interventions for energy, oil and gas sector. So let's continue on that one. The Chita, through our extensive stakeholder participation on national and regional level, compiled our sector skills plan for the chemical sector, supported by the 9 subsectors that we've showed with. What we've done is said we don't want one sector skills plan. Kiribone has gone and got all 9 subsectors to give us a chamber skills plan. That chamber skills plan is not accepted unless it's consulted widely within the people that nominated them to serve on the chambers. So that has worked extremely well. The Chief Access Team primarily asked committee to define skills and critical skills needs for the chemical industry. And if you'll take the trouble to open our SSP, you're going to find everything recorded in there. The strategic plan thereafter contextualizes these priorities into our strategic plan and annual performance plan with clear resource allocation, so we will be able to track and measure from the WSP right through to the strategic plan that we submit that our minister signs off. Exactly what is needed, exactly how much money is needed, and exactly when we must complete training and when we must allocate funds. Everything is worked out to the team. With clear, as we were saying, resource allocation, performance indicators, predetermined targets in accordance with treasury framework. And you know treasury is 3 years before, 1 year behind and current. So that's what we've got. Planned, looked at, confirmed by industry, and that is how we've gone forward. Now the very important thing for us is forming partnerships. You can't do everything alone. And you can't do it without primary players. And in primary players for us, according to the White Paper on Post School Education and Training also, is workplaces and institutions. What we are doing now, we're getting very strict, and we say, public colleges, if you do not have workplaces lined up already, if you haven't spoken to them, they are not happy to fund you. Because we do not want to fund for unemployment. And we are facilitating those kinds of relationships. For example, Orbit College and Nexar. We are starting a project there. And say to Orbit, but you know what? What are you going to do? Where are these people going to get their workplace experience? Because Nexar cannot take more people than they've already said they can take. They've brought to us 42 big and small companies, smaller more than big. They say, here are the companies, let's have a workshop, let's get that first step going. Because with our workplace experience, we find 600,000 young South Africans walking the streets as graduates that couldn't complete their workplace experience. So at the CHITA, we say, no. Let's turn it on its head, that triangle, and say, workplace is commit first. And we're putting a lot of money into workplace experience training, and I'll show you this now for the budget breakdown. Will is big in the CHITA. Without that, it's a no-no. We have also got a detailed occupational handbook. So what's this occupational handbook? In it, at this point in time, growing, is 142 occupations within South Africa, chemical industry, manufacturing, college, what you like, all kinds. So we're really quite integrated in South Africa, although we've got these false boundaries between us. And we are saying, here's the occupation, for example, say, welder, one of our key ones. What is it that you need? What entry level of qualification? What will you study in that first year, second year, third year? What are you required to know to be able to practice properly? And how long does it take? So it's clear. And that also acts for industry as a profile when they are growing up job profiles, what is the kind of thing that people need to have. And I must say our unions are really, really happy about that because it gives them something to grasp onto when they go for the negotiations or in their committees where they talk about skills and so on. And then throughout NSDS3, the CHITA displayed excellent performance in its organizational targets for every financial year and all within an unqualified audit opinion. So I think, you know, not many can say that. And we are very proud to be able to say that here today. We'll still continue with our impact. Performance and monitoring are run continuously by the CHITA. Our governance structures are tough. You will know that about 5 years ago, we did have some issues in the CHITA. They are gone. We've got a wonderful board. Very, very hard-hitting, sharp board that I think, and I wish you were here to say it to yourself, but I think they are very happy with the kind of things that they're doing now in the CHITA. Another very important thing, and this I said to my unions the other day, and they were first big-eyed and shocked, and then they all smiled. I said, we're becoming a labor broker of note. The unions got very worried, and they said, what do you mean? And then I explained to them, I said, don't worry, we're not charging anybody a cent. What we're doing is putting up a supply-side database where all the money that is funded to companies, say for graduate development or anything, trade, occupations, equity colleges, whatever, once that learner needs to have workplace experience, they will be able to put themselves on the CHITA database. And we're not going to close it with the CHITA. It's going to be open because we're in one country. And then employers will give them a right to the database. And they'll find each other. They'll find their learners there. Because often when you give grants, and even other CHITAs will tell you, companies then come and say, where can we find learners? And they say, no, we cannot do that. You plan up front. But if you want help for certain areas, and this is for work, you will find learners. And you then call them, you contact them. We'll have looked at the CVs already before we face them. Find each other there, and let's see if we can incentivize that as well. So it's really, you know, trying to facilitate and open up relationships and partnerships. And the following slide, therefore, indicates to you our discretionary grant investment and the number of learners supported, not planned to be supported, but supported, really supported. And where I've got the ticket, it denotes the linkages of National Operation Pakisa, the NDP, NSDS3, the New Growth Path, IFAS, and the CIP. So for research and skills planning, the department that Ceremonia here heads, $10,755,000 is the budget. But look down the line, occupationally directed programs, these are learnerships and apprenticeships and other. $226 million. Now we've got a youth sector. We're bigger than EC, but smaller than Melissa. So, and total budget at the bottom for last year, you see, is $458 million. Then, but look at where we put our money. Equity capacity building and support, 12.7. Let's go to, I'm not going to go to everyone, workplace-based skills development, 78 million rand. So you can see the importance we are giving to this work integrated learning, workplace-based, and so on. Government medium-term priorities, the SIPs and others, 67 million rand. Looking after our equity colleges and other institutions, all of that together, the pots are huge. CBOs, NGOs, co-ops. At the moment, that stands at 1.9. That was not this year, 2014-15, yes? And through our strategic project funding window, that's another funding window. There's more money in here. What have we done so far? Let's just talk co-ops. We have taken the co-ops and shown them legislation passed in 2007, the Cooperative Act. Most co-ops are not really aware of that act. And that's a powerful piece of legislation, showing them their rights, the how-tos, the how-not-tos. That's what we're doing at the moment, is capacity building co-ops to understand the how of what they want to do. We will talk quickly here about some of the programs and the money, the social budget. Learners' workplace experience, 17 million. This is now only for the gas, oil, and energy subsector from 2013 to 2014-15. And that, if you see the very large bullet at the bottom, this money, 128 million, excludes the mandatory grant payment of 126 million. So mandatory grant is a WSP-related fund that we give. So a company submitted WSP, you know that upfront you get the 20%, and then there's a lot of other hoops to climb through, and discretionary grant is where the money is now. The new grant regulations, she's extremely happy about that. And I must say, our sector has embraced that, believe it or not. Because they do understand when we say to them, real training is training that's monitored, properly monitored. The discretionary grant based training is monitored much more than WSP based training is monitored. So they have come and walked that long road with us. Placement of skills in marketplace and through the partnership with industry and government. Please take note of this because we are proud about this one. We've got an integrated partnership. The integrated partnership is critically important to the CETA. Otherwise, as I said now, it's just really rubbing our own backs and feeling good about nothing. These integrated partnerships are structured and managed between CETA, industry, CVET colleges, and government. As the CVET colleagues, I'm going to talk in the next point to just give you a little bit of information. We've already got a blueprint that the Department of Higher Education and Training has taken on and looked at and wants to take throughout the country. on how to implement successfully with FET colleges. So in this instance, it was Flavius Mareka FET College, Public College. It was Stefan and it was Cheetah. Am I going too much here? Can I hello? Okay. I will be a speed train going on. I won't fall on the Slavic Pareka. What have we done? Stefan has said that we want to go to the communities. We want to get people, we want to look after communities around our facilities. That's not the social investment as well. Together with the company, the college has redefined the curriculum. We have accredited the college and the learners are being funded and the pass rates are excellent. Theory at the college, practical at the workplace, guaranteed. 80% of the learners will get jobs, 20% will be released to the market, guaranteed. So that's the kind of model we are following. Other partnerships, I'm almost done here. These are the colleges that you can see that we have already got a real partnership with and we are doing a lot of work. And we've got slides in front of you. The difference in higher education, mechanical, these are kinds of higher education qualifications in electrical, big, huge, mechanical, chemical, etc. The primary focal area of Cheetah in 2015-16, the workplace experience target of 1,320 learners, various placements, etc. Okay. Critical partners are SAPIA, South African Petroleum Industries Association, the National Petroleum Employer Association and the South African Oil and Gas Association. I have got a newsletter here from SAUSA where they've mentioned the kinds of partnerships we have. I think we'll leave them somewhere. Please pick one up and read it and have a look at the kinds of things we're doing together, already doing together, not planning to. Emanating, I'm just going to go to the last slide. Emanating from the stakeholder consultative process, the petroleum subsector has defined its list of occupations, which they regard as key and critical to industry that we are already funding. Currently, I'm going to that last slide. In the petroleum subsector skills plan, they have 1,679 vacancies in priority skills areas, which constitute 3.7% of the total employment in the sector. Now, you will ask, what are you doing about this? I'm not going to answer that now. If you ask, I will answer for this time. And these are the skills they've defined. You can see artisan, welders, electricians, boilermakers, carpenters. In the waterberg area, in that SIP, we're taking through coded welder program. Grade 9s can enter, matriculants can enter, people after University of Technology can enter. 9-month program, coded welder, and they're being snapped up by industry. Immediate job creation. Brilliant stuff. And we're going to roll that up out to other SIPs as well. And then in addition, the following skills priorities have been identified. I'll just go through the first one there. With SAPIA, we're designing and implementing a South African Petroleum Institute in support of integrated skills management strategy for the petroleum industry. Money given, MOU signed, and started work already. Hydraulic fracking, that we know is about to come in 2018. We're already in the space. We're already looking at how to give opportunities to small business entrepreneurs. We're already looking at the forensic chemistry side of those kinds of initiatives. And specialized skills development support needed in hydrochemistry, forensic chemistry, economics, social sciences, etc., etc. Talking to the NMMU, Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, possibly even funding a research chair there to look after the water needs. Water is great and very important in chemical industry. Operation Pachisa, the rest, maybe you should just look at the rest there, the Pachisa project, our intervention, Saldana Bay. We were on the 27th, 3 days ago, at the West Coast Municipality. We invited to say what it is that we can partner with them. And the Durex Trade Force was there. And skills development partnerships empowered and the implementation of targets set by the biofuel strategy. I think we were very happy the other day to read that tobacco is going to be used as the basis of biofuels rather than maize. We think it's much better. So we can eat the maize and we can get people to smoke less possibly. green economy is built in the Northern Cape for solar and wind energy. Together with SCAR, a square kilometer array, believe it or not, we're working very, very hard to be able to go and do maths and science for learners to be able to enter that space as well. Wastewater management is a sustainable solution towards wastewater management. The heavy chemical industry is a polluter. So that's why we need to really be in that water space, and that's where we are with industry already. And then Cody Brothers I've spoken to, I'm not going to talk to any of those. Next are very important. In fact, last week they asked me again, when's our next meeting, to look at the skills for nuclear. Ongoing partnerships, RPL, recognition of prior learning, critically important. You've put lots of money into and lots of RPLs through to the high level RPLs. And now what we'd like is a last bullet. We want to see a much clearer articulation between TVET colleges and universities to allow for artisans to develop and become engineers. Why not to stay at artisanal level? And then, this is a white paper, this is my last slide, says that the Department of Higher Education and Training, along with the institutions that it is responsible for, is located in the nexus between the formal education system and the workplace. We say, we are the trusted center located between industry and the working people to be able to bring industry on board when they are still be lacking or dragging their feet to come and do better work with the students who make it other skills training for our people of South Africa. We'd really like to thank everybody for allowing us today to be here. I'm sorry if I took a little more time, but we are quite passionate about the work we do. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, now it's time for questions, comments, and clarity seeking.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a long presentation. Maybe the Secretary should check it. But I know the Arsenal supporter and the expectations are usually higher than the realistic factors. First on the Department of Energy. I've just made a little note, so I'll play through it. I'm on page 7 here. Is that a great need, like workshops, for example, where the immediate communities are affected, like Madupi? The communities around Madupi's life has been changed forever. So it's not only the supplying the labor or the workshop or the skills that you implement there, there's also the people being affected by these great or big energy projects. On the next page, international training, where was this? Is this international training that took place outside of country? You can also maybe, if that's the case, one person's office company could be sent and then he can train others. On the next page, page 9, the training budget of nearly 6 million, right? Why is this, for example, if you spend this much, the Department on Energy, on training, and then you still employ 24 million rand of contractors in the energy sector? You know, like we, again, maybe I must refer to Madupi, this is incompetent contractors as well. and the group is a routed boiler that should be preheated, boilers that cost the taxpayers of the country millions of rand, and through their incompetence, they welded as well these boilers, high carbon steel, without preheating it. So I don't really know where it all comes from. Page 11. Same disabled people, but none are employed. But I actually saw in the page, the next page, showed two disabled people employed. Let me share this. Are we only doing Department of Energy while they're in the seabed? Or can I carry on with them? I can carry on to the next set of presentations as well. For the Department of Energy spending millions on training, education, and burglary success, etc., how does the Energy and Water Training Authority justify their existence? I can maybe say one or two, but I would like to hear them say. And what is their success rate? 130,000 people working in the EW sector, were they all trained by this department, those in permanent positions, on whose posts were they trained? South Africa being the 21st driest country in the world, actually. So how do we put this, and energy being one of the biggest polluters and users of water, wasters of water, so how do we put that, the water usage and polluting and energy together in this department. A water resource is all the protection we can get. Energy in many cases, I've just said it. With good and intensive programs existing in the country, why do we import so many foreigners for our so-called skilled jobs? And I just mentioned that how do they justify? I've just read the quote right at the back, greatness is by Oliver Wendell Holmes. I'm not going to read it, we were right out of time. Winston Churchill also, we shall never take advantage of the weak or the not informed and the not knowing better, for then we shall surely fail. On that quote. What was the last one? On the manufacturing engineering, basically I summarized the background, spoke about the field people and the engineering, the downstream companies from energy, where I mentioned the boilers, so that could maybe be wrapped up under a lot. The chemical engineering industry, they also there's non-profitable companies. But see, 45% of their income is from levies, and that's 45%, if this is what it's saying, is 206 million rand or the value. So that would say the income should be about 460 million rand. That's 45% also gives you 45,000 people. So they are assisting or placing more than 110,000 people. Well, let me get that in the door. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Mohamed Khan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before I zoom into the questions, I must also express that if you come here to present a report without sending it to a record before, we'll chase you away. Reports must reach the committee before you come and present. Now you want us to come here unprepared. It's not going to happen again. It's for the first and the last time. Next time, Jay, they won't report. On page 3, there's a long list of departmental trainees. I'm interested in understanding what adult education and training programs that you are providing as a department to your staff, as you said here when you're presenting. And also on gesture again, under the achievements, there's a list of certificates that you have written. Whether it's a certificate of attendance or just a certificate, it's not here. Are these certificates accredited? That's what I want to understand, whether it's just a certificate of attendance. All of them. There's inconsistencies on your report. Other institutions are mentioned and other institutions are not mentioned. For example, there's a slide where you referred to a training which was done to University of Pretoria and others are still on the pipeline, let's say Image Lord Motivu. Still in progress, what institutions are providing these trainings for officials? Excel, Microsoft Advanced, where I'm sitting, I'm not thinking that officials, they are not computer literate. So we are here to be certified. And Microsoft Project, is it for IT guys, or is it just for officials, just an ordinary official? Which happen to be employed without a computer skill. And on page 6, I read that. On page 10, the report, okay, on page 9, there's an international training workshop implemented and two of South African students were awarded the 2-year master's degree. The last time you reported, you had a challenge of people in the department who live for a master's. And now you are investing on the two South African students. The department. Are you not going to suffer the same consequences? Are you not going to go and invest these girls elsewhere? What measures in place to ensure that they come back and work in the department? The internal budget programs, I'm not going to allude to that. I also want to understand, Chairperson, on certain basic development programs which are outlined in this, because there are many, your page doesn't continue and reflect on the youth development programs. But where I'm sitting, there is nothing that begins to say the department is partnering with the NYDA or South African Youth Council. Who are you partnering with on those youth development programs? Or you yourselves are youth development agency of sort, because you can't do youth programs without them being involved, without them being in charge of what they want, because they are the future of this country. And also the selection of 89 graduates or those of the exchange programs, the process of selection and what have you, is not reflected here. 89 students graduated from Malaysia. Where are they? Where are they now? I want to know as to where those students. And page 17. I've noted something on page 17. 50 South Africans on the China nuclear program. what South Africa is. Is it young South Africans, women, ministers, or just ordinary South Africans? Because this is vague. It does not give an understanding to a person like myself who is sitting and listening to the report. Because it says the Department of Energy and NEXA will be training 50 South Africans on the China nuclear program. Nuclear is one of the things as Petrohago everywhere. And in fact, other countries, there are all this view that we must fail out nuclear because they themselves are failing it out. Now, you can't have South Africans gallop and increase trust in those countries without us knowing who are they. We want to know who are these South Africans. Students are returning on the 7th of February. Probably they've landed already on this international partnership, King's Nuclear Scholarship Program. What are the plans? They are returning, and what is it that they're going to do? Are they going to sit at home? Or you've got a planned program, or you're going to pay them somewhere? Another clarity, second question. And on page 19, on ratified trainees by EWCTA, you need grants there. I don't understand the difference between a grant and the 5.2 million which you have that you are using to avail some skills or run some programs, which Honorable Estesen added to. What's the difference between the two? And Chair, if I may continue and pose questions to other presentations. MMNU is very popular. In all these presentations, MMNU says, MMNU is that. What is it that is so special about MMNU? I think that our education doesn't have what we need. But then the minister doesn't, he did not find any tangible kind of an arrangement from these other institutions. All these presentations, NMNU is at the core of the implementation of whether it's a skill or a research. Everything is NMNU. And because of the name of the institution, I'm sitting here posing questions to myself. I really need to be clarified as to what is it. All the presentations, NMNU. Advanced diploma is still to be developed at NMU as a WCT presented here. When is this going to be finalized? We need to know when is this going to be finalized. Marcita, you know, we are a country that strives to eradicate unemployment. But there are totally two jobs, a chair and a DGA. Why is that? Is there no human capacity in South Africa? Why do we have people with double jobs when there are people who are unemployed out there? We really need to be clarified. And I also want to understand the role of NOMSA. In the bigger scheme of everything, you're talking grants, you're talking collaboration. There's NOMSA. What's the role of NOMSA? And how are you going to be involved in all this? What are they bringing in this thing of a green sustainability? Is there in your presentation? Localization of manufacturing components is one important aspect which you have outlined on your report. Now, I want to check, how are you assisting with the skills available for manufacturing of energy components for those ordinary people out there who are in the sector, but with no skills in manufacturing these components? I have moved from Engineering, I'm on Nursing, hoping that you are noting. 20 million contributed to community development in Khayelitsha. What is it that has done? Community development is very broad. It can be anything. Now we want specifics. What is it that you have contributed on in terms of community development in Khayelitsha? In your report, you're saying that 500 learners are trained on solar geyser installation. What I'm seeking, I know it's 400 learners that you have trained a completed training. You are still to train 100 with OSB. So there's still outstanding 100 learners which are not trained. So you can't come and report here that it's 500 learners when it's only 400 that have completed the training. Your report is mischievous and misleading. Cheetah, I've got few questions for you. 1,679 vacancies. What are you waiting for? When are those vacancies going to be filled? Is it because of lack of skills that you are looking for? We kind of almost vacancies. Remember, with the job creation which President Zuma alluded on during the state of the nation, you have the responsibility to contribute immensely. Now, we can't be sitting with 1,679 vacancies which are there. Those vacancies, there have to be timeframes properly in place in ensuring that those vacancies are filled. In your slide, I saw something about hydraulic fracking. The last time we had a presentation, there was a challenge around the fracking in Central Karoo. And there was an advice that U.S. Is the best of the best. There is no other country that can do this for us. But I saw in one of the presentations, I don't know whether it was AWCETA referring to UK in terms of the capacity on this particular state. But from Chita, I want to check whether in your skills program you have this kind of a program which you offer to those that need the skills, so that we are a better country ourselves. One last question, Shane. In terms of the RIPPP, this one goes to the Department of Energy. During the construction phases, we know that the contractors that are there, for those who work in this construction, like Modepi, for an example, temporary provisions, when the contract finishes, let's say 2020, they will be unemployed, those people. Now, what role do you play in ensuring that these people are capacitated such that when the contract ends, they will be able to stand on their own and run their own businesses and employ more people? Because I want to believe that with all these presentations that are made here, which are energy oriented, somehow, you have an influence in the department in ensuring that skills are transferred one of your officials to nurture those people at the end of those constructions. Thank you, Chair. That is the mission.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. To the department, is the department involved in guiding citizens as to where skills are required and how? The number two, Chair, what is the level of involvement of the department in terms of skills development at the FITAS? The other one, Chair, I want to know from the department, what is the role of industry in South Africa in ensuring adequate provision of skills? Is the department involved in assisting them in any way? The last one, Chair, I want to know from the department, what is the rate of employment of graduates of CITAS? Or are all the graduates from companies? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to start with the Department of Energy's report, and I just welcome the Honourable Mohammed Salah's chastisation of the Department for giving us a report on the day of committee. It makes it very hard to really evaluate information we are being provided. That said, Chair, I just have a few specific questions. The first one I'd like to start with is the Department notes quite an extensive list of workshops and conferences implemented. I count 29 workshops in total. I would be interested to understand what are the total costs associated with attendance of these conferences. Some of them look to be very far afield from South Africa. And also I'd be very keen to understand how the department determined its priority around which conferences to attend. I specifically note a bias against or not towards renewables, as the department feel it has a sufficient understanding of the renewable sector, or were renewables not on the agenda. I'm very concerned to understand how we prioritize what workshops we are attending, why we are attending them, in terms of our learning interventions. So the department could please clarify that for me, as well as the total costs associated. I also must raise a question around why we found it necessary to spend 34 initiatives on media training, considering that there's, I'm sure, a comms office and a media person. I'm not quite understanding why the whole senior executive requires extensive media training. This government is really quite specialised in spin, so maybe a greater emphasis on other areas would probably be more welcome. Chair, I also just want to understand a bit more about the internal bursary program offered by the department. All the information we've given are that there are 76 recipients, and again, I'm very interested in determining why these bursaries were provided for specific studies. Particularly, I'm interested to understand why we have 5 members of the department studying the MBA. I'm not quite sure how this is directly relevant to the work of the department, and again, considering the costs associated with MBA studies, and the difficulty in retaining staff who have MBA, I would be interested to understand why we're focusing on MBA studies. Also, Chair, I would find it very helpful if the department would give us a gender and race breakdown, so we can better understand if the department is meeting its training objectives in light of the broader objectives of the state in terms of development of its staff. Chair, I must say I find the report back on the learnership programs quite disappointing. I recognise that I'm not an expert in this area, but it does seem to me like we have excessively small numbers in terms of learnerships. And in terms of, I'd better like to understand the exact budget for learnerships and what we're achieving with them. But frankly, in terms of what our government has said is focused on in terms of achievements for work opportunities and actual work placements, these numbers seem incredibly low. And again, I do contrast the two money that is being spent on intern bursaries, again, I emphasize, you know, the amount of money we spend on one MBA versus the potential learnerships that we can have is significant. So I must again highlight that I question the department's priorities, and I'd very much prefer or like to have some understanding of how these are determined and what potential future growth for learnerships there are in the department, considering being aware of its financial constraints, but also being aware of the objectives of this government and this administration. I think that's all, Chair. I just want to quickly check my notes on the EWCTA. I'd like to thank the EWCTA for their presentation. I thought it was quite helpful. I'm very interested, Chair, just to get a better understanding of these potential job numbers that were presented, potentially 130,000 in energy generation and 240,000 in natural resource management. It seems like this doesn't necessarily align with the government's proposed very strong move into nuclear, but we can understand if that has been taken into consideration, and if not, where the potential jobs might come, and also whether the future growth of renewables has been factored, aggressive growth of renewables has been factored into these figures. Just these are very interesting numbers, just want to get a better understanding where they come from. I'd also take great interest in understanding the proposed partnerships with NECA, considering issues with NECA around corruption and maladministration and complex budgets, and also just very to detail around when we can expect to use nuclear training programs, a training academy, and these sort of collaborative agreements to actually start actually taking place, and we might actually see them, and where they might be focused, considering that the majority of the nuclear industry is in the Western Cape. I know the interest that the EWCTA is visiting Rosatom while the Department of Health seems to be focusing on China. Obviously, very interesting possible competitive relationship there. Chair, if we can also please request that the EWCTA made its ethical energy and water background study report available to the committee, as well as a prediction for future energy scenarios. I'm specifically interested in the line where it's decentralizing energy production and service delivery, considering that this isn't, I mean, I'm pretty pro this from my party, but I know that the government hears the word decentralization and it cringes. So I must say I'm quite interested to see that the EWCTA has done some research in this area, and we're very keen to see what that research stipulates and says, and hopefully the committee and the department might take a better look. And finally, can you give us a better idea, and maybe this falls into CHITA as well, with the potential, with the project Pakistan, the focusing on natural gas and the development of the gas industry, I see very little in terms of actual concrete plans in terms of skills development in those sectors. I know that, for example, the presentation from the EWCTA speaks about future potential and some of the initial initiatives they're starting, and I must congratulate EWCTA for putting together March skills summit, and we'll watch that with great interest. But greater explanations around how we plan to develop this industry, considering the requirements of government, would be very interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I have got some few questions. Maybe it cut across all presentations, but first and foremost, let me just appreciate the presentations made. Secondly, let me indicate whether it will be a comment and a concern at the same time that I learned that in South Africa we have got many, many, many training institutions which conduct their duties day in, day out. But what I learned is that those people who establish these institutions or training institutions mostly
as a former head of some art department. Because that is why many training institutions, they appear to be fly by night. You do not have a pool of trained people as a database where you can say, this is our database, wherein there's a need for a certain skill. We can go and have that skill and employ it somewhere. I find it very difficult to understand that. I said I would mention some concerns. So also, because they are connected from their former departments or former institutions, they are able to manipulate. Because I don't think some of the training institutions are demand-driven, skills demand-driven. They are funding compliant, because a certain guy has got a certain amount of money which is accessible for as long as we have got this requirement. A case in point, you can go to talk out in one of the training institutions has now been closed, only to find that they were using the Umalusi emblem or some other document, which in fact they are not a qualified institution to do that. So basically, this is what we have. You will have, especially in the rural areas, you will have got many the so-called youth who have attended a tertiary education, who are without employment, because they will go to a certain institution and train or capacitated as a tourist or tourism a student, only to find that they do not get any employment anywhere because they are trained in on things that is not market oriented. So that becomes a difficulty. So I think CITAS should have to at least hire much more to the Department of Education so that we have that learning. But one other thing, Chairperson, is I think all of what we had here is based on three things, on my understanding. It's money, skills, and sources. In fact, sources of energy and some other resources related to energy. I don't think we have to build another Midupi before we can make sure that Midupi is working effective. We have to utilize the little resources that we have to benefit the people, so that we are able to see where the shortage of skills is coming from. Now, my questions are, now, CITAS, what mechanism have you employed as CITAS to promote entrepreneurship training in the energy sector? Now, if you have, are you concentrating to urban areas only? If not, if you include the rural areas, could you please lead us to see with our own eyes where these things have been implemented as a case study. Because there is a huge gap between people who live in urban areas vis-à-vis those who live in rural areas. Also, lastly, perhaps Chester said is that there has been an introduction of a sitter by Labor Department in the past. As far as I remember, a former minister Ndandam was the head of that ministry. Where this now it has been introduced in 2009, and there has been a landscape where the sitters not affected by that landscape or that change. If that is the case, what are your what are the indications on this change? So, Chairperson, those are a few questions I wanted to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me endorse the appreciation of the presentations by my colleagues. South Africa is embarking on an energy expansion program. Is South Africa prepared for that in terms of skills? How prepared are we as a country in terms of the skills? My second question, I would like to know the project that are supported by CITAS in the Eastern Cape, in which municipalities are those? I thank you, Professor.
Thank you very much for thank you very much for those questions. Quite a number of questions, and I'm trying to know what is in the meeting. So let's see, you can answer from where you sit here. So let's start with the Department of Energy and take all the questions.
Chairperson and Honorable Committee members, thank you very much for the questions. I'll be addressing the majority of the questions, and the rest I will request my colleagues to cover those that I may have not covered. Honorable Mr. Aizen spoke of workshop for communities in, for the Motobi Beat program. Chair, I take it that this is a comment, and I fully agree with his sentiments that a community should be involved. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, government is advocating for opportunities for local communities, and I take it that with ESCOM need to be built program, local communities are benefiting in certain cases. For example, bus drivers, those that are ferrying workers from their place of residence to Maidobi power station, they should come from the local community, because those skills should be readily available. So I fully support what the Honourable Member is raising. International training concerned that were outside, only one official attended international training, and whether we are giving this opportunity to other officials. Yes, we do, Honourable Member. However, in terms of each training, officials are required to produce a report, a handwritten report that will, one, guide us whether the training is of benefit to the department, what lessons, were learned from that training, can that training be recommended to other officials? And again, the same material, if needs be, can be used to capacitate other officials within the department without really sending more officials to the same institution. Budget of nearly 6 million as part of our training, vis-a-vis the 70 million that is used by NEDU before contract of boiler makers. We as a department, we are not really linked to the made to be built program. It's handled by ESCOM. Then, if I may move on, Honorable Mohamed Salah raised a concern about the late submission of the presentation. Chair and Honorable Committee members, we sincerely apologize for this. It was an oversight from our side. It was all sent yesterday to the Secretary. We had an arrangement that this must be sent 2 days before the actual presentation. We had our own internal delays, but we will try and improve on this. We sincerely apologize for this. There was a question in terms of losing skills to other entities. We have a retention strategy, and in terms of training, chairperson, it's based on employees' personal development plans to say that this is each employee is required for him or her to perform his or her duties. The following requirements for training are necessary. And based on that assessment, which is a thorough assessment, we then offer a training. And again, we are guided by the availability of resources. But Chair, I must also indicate that in the energy space, we also recruit from other SOEs and those that we compete with. So it's really a question of sharing. The only concern will be when we lose skills out of the country. For example, we had a colleague that we trained in the past 2 years. She went abroad. She worked for only a few months. She then got an offer in one of our military entities within the NH space. So I'm basically saying it's not really a loss, because we also get recruits from these entities. The only question is only when we lose them outside of the country. Youth Development Program, why we're not involving National Youth Development Agency? We do work with National Development Agency on a number of projects, and there is a dedicated directorate, we call it Community Upliftment Directorate, which deals with youth development issues in terms of capacity, opportunities within the energy sector. For example, we have this solar water heaters program. And the directive from them says that the majority of our youth benefit, especially those that are unemployed. So working with NYDA, we are addressing these issues, Chairperson. Fifty South Africans attending training in China, who are those? Chair, we said we have 50 trainees, 19 are females, 31 are males from the Department of Energy, National Nuclear Regulator, NNR, ESCOM, NEXA, Economic Development, Environmental Affairs, and Tourism, as well as the famous Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality. Then there was a question on IRPP. I started to understand this question, Chair. Perhaps if it may be rephrased in terms of what is IRPP, I couldn't get it. But the Honorable Mohamed Salah went on to say these are temporary positions. When contract ends, what happens to those employees? During the construction, we have temporary jobs that are offered within the local communities. And we also have full-time employment opportunities for those that have necessary skills. But if other opportunities are vague, those employees are used for similar projects to assist them in terms of job creation. But they are categorized as temporary jobs. There was a consent by Honourable Member Mabunda to say, in terms of our country training institutions, we end up with the myriad of departments offering training to the same entities. Chair, we as the Department of Energy, we have not been subjected to this, but it is a concern if it happens. And again, in the private sector, they would have a cooling off period to say if you have worked in this company, you cannot provide similar services for a number of years. So maybe that could be a solution as well in the public sector, so that we avoid this, which I would call a revolving door, having somebody leaving the entity and later coming back as a consultant. I think it's a serious problem. I concur with your concerns. The rest, may I request colleagues to address those that I may have not covered. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will start with the question which was raised by Honourable Hastazen on the employment of disabled people. I should say that we strive to absorb all the sense that we appoint in our department into permanent positions. In a part of our presentation, we indicate that we absorb two of those interns. The question with regard to, from Honorable Mandesan, with regard to the AET training that we are presenting, we do have officials in our department who do not have metric. It's three of them who are in this particular program. I'll go again to the question of the grant. What is the difference between the grant over and above the internal departmental budget? This grant, we are focusing on specific training. In the last, I think, two or three slides of our presentation, we indicated that this is the grant that we apply from the CITES, and it's over and above the internal budget that we have. Let me pause and hand over to my colleague.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, I'll start with the point that was raised by Honourable Maham Shala around the, you know, the figure that we presented, the 486 on the training implemented and the lack of, you know, us, you know, showing the issues of disability. We take note of that. But yes, we do ensure that, you know, officials or personnel in the department who have disability, you know, go for, you know, the required training as alluded to by Mr. Ndanzi earlier, in line with the personal development plans. And just to add on what Mr. Ndou said in terms of the adult training, we have also, you know, looked at, you know, what programs should we assist, you know, these adult learners who don't have a metric on in the department. And what we did was also to put them on learnership programs, just to, you know, amplify, you know, their skills and show that, you know, we can develop them further. And also we training to put them in the salary streams to ensure that they have the requisite qualifications for them to be able to move up the ladder. The issue of whether the programs are certificates of attendance or competence,
you know, the 486 access programs and, you know, where these programs are attended, official tests, the certificate of competence, but you see that we have, you know, around 81 workshops and conferences that were attended. Those, you know, they only get, you know, a certificate of attendance for those. And the issue around the advanced Excel that was raised by Honorable Mohamed Salah, that is not for our IT personnel, but for staff, the general staff in the department that deal with, you know, our figures and so forth from on a day-to-day basis. And the issue around the chief and master scholarship, you note on the presentation that those three that we have in, it's a collaboration that we have with Nexa, and those are employed personnel by Nexa. So we won't be using those skills, in the near future. The issue around the 89 graduates that we have from the Malaysian Scholarship Program, most of these graduates are employed in the country. We have one that is employed outside the country, but most of these are employed primarily in Eskom, Petro SA, and others employed by private entities in the country. And I think the other issue was around the 600 trainees grant that we have requested from the EWCTA, as we have had for discretionary grants. That is it's one of the areas to amplify issues around the solar water heating programs to assist, you know, and the country in terms of ensuring that we can be able to, you know, have, you know, solar water heaters installed in the country. And the issue of MBAs, why MBAs, you know, the Master in Business Administration, we in the department, we are administrators, and we feel that, you know, to some extent we need to, you know, upskill, you know, especially, you know, our middle to senior managers on administration skills. And also, there was a concern that was raised on the number of learnerships, which is very low. We're working closely with the CITAS, as we have seen, Honorable Member, in our presentation, that we have applied for discretionary grants just to ensure that we can, you know, have bigger numbers into the department. So, you know, there is something that we're doing in that particular part. And yeah, Chair, I think, you know, those are the ones that we're not covered.
Chairperson, with your permission, I noticed that there are a few questions that we may not have covered. And then, thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the total cost, the honourable question that the honourable member Makina he raised, so that we have 29 workshops. May we kindly request to come back to him? We want to give accurate figures. How do we determine training needs? Like I said, it's based on the personal development plans. We then get guided to say these are training requirements for each employee. And again, the issue of funding comes into play, whether we have funds or not. We are prioritizing training on renewables, honorable member. It's in line with our IRP, which we said we will have engineering. The deferral management on media training is really multi-skilling. We do have a dedicated official that deals with media, but I think it's also fair that we also are able to articulate the good work that the department is doing in the community. Honorable Taku asked the question whether, as we are moving towards an easy build program, are we ready as South Africa? Yes, we are ready. We do have a skill internally in the department,
But over and above that, we are also training and working with CITAS. We are providing adequate training to ensure that in the country we don't suffer. And that includes regulatory bodies are responsible to ensure our safety as well as compliance issues. We have a collective responsibility to ensure that we train adequately, and that includes the SCOM as well. So you were here as a team, honorable member. Thank you very much.
I've asked probably got three questions, and these three questions are in the matter.
And the honorable focus?
Yes.
Second question.
Yes.
No, I recognize that. EW.
Thank you, Chief.
I'll respond to I'm going to ask for your petition to extend the card. So let's just go through.
Okay, thanks. Okay, thanks. I'll respond to some of the questions raised and concerns raised with regard to the baseline report and so on. We will avail that if it's available. I think by the time we arrive in the office, we can email that so that the committee can go through and look into the findings that came out of that research. And with regard to mechanisms to promote entrepreneurs, chiefs, and so on, whether it's in rural or in urban areas. In our research, we are able to give a breakdown in terms of the municipalities that you're working with, both in rural and also in urban areas. But some of the projects, for an example, that we have in Northwest, particularly around Fasego, is that those tenants, after they've been trained to become solar installers and so on, they're also going to be given skills on new venture creation so that they can create their own costs so that they can also work with the municipalities in those areas when the opportunity comes. So we are in that space, not just to train them, but also to give them the skills that they can use beyond the project. The other question was around where are we in Eastern Cape and so on. In our report, we are indicating the municipalities and provincial government departments, in particular in Eastern Cape. And we're also giving a breakdown on the municipalities in the Eastern Cape, so you can be able to access the report and be able to trace that. Because it's a great breakdown. And also, how do we share the resources with the FET colleges in all those nine provinces and so on. So we are there. And I think others I can hand over to my colleagues to continue. Thanks.
Honorable Makar, goodbye.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. I will try to respond to some of the questions, and my colleagues will also add where I have left out. The first one that I will address is linked to the comment that was made by Honorable Mahambe Shala around NMMU. We have indicated in our presentations that we have entered into collaborative agreements with a number of universities, including universities of technology. And in our presentation, we have highlighted some of the interventions that have happened in other institutions, including that we have mentioned the baseline research study in energy and water that we have done with the University of Johannesburg. We have mentioned the work that we are doing on REEC, Renewable Energy Center of Excellence, that we are doing with other institutions, those pivot institutions as an example. So as a speaker, all the institutions that we have entered into collaborative agreements with, we are doing quite a number of projects. with those institutions. In responding to the supply challenges, the university, of course, requested that we support them, and that was based also on our collaborative agreements. They requested that we work together with them as a sitter in the development of the diploma in renewable energy. And that's how we are doing that exercise or that project with the university. The other question also was, when will the diploma be completed? We are in terms of the program of action we have in place with the university, we are expecting the program to be finalized before the end of 2015. There was another issue, the question that was raised by the honorable member around, I think if it was honorable, doesn't matter. I think the question was around our partnership with Nexa. The honorable member wanted to know when are we going to start hitting the ground running and why Nexa. And I think the partnership you mentioned was within the context of the engagement that are taking place led by the Department of Energy with all its relevant stakeholders. There's a meeting that has been initiated. We haven't sat around the table to discuss all potential collaboration, but it was within that context that we will engage with NECA as well, together with other stakeholders in the energy sector, to see how, as a CETA, in terms of the demand and the supply of skills, can we collaborate with all those national or government national imperatives taking place. And of course, it is within that context that development of qualifications like nuclear, but the other question was that when will we develop those qualifications? It is within all those efforts and the international benchmarks that are taking place that a proper plan will be put in place. All of them are anticipated to be part and parcel of our annual performance plan implementation for the year 2050. Or the year that is ending next year, end of March. I'm going to pause and request my colleagues to respond to the other questions. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to touch very briefly on some of the questions that have yet to be answered. In terms of the sector, one of the honourable members, I think it's honourable member Esther Hazenet, mentioned that he was concerned that as a sector we still seem to be importing a lot of foreign skills, and we have to acknowledge that that is the status at the moment, and that is why we are doing as much as we can to reverse that and localise the skills and provide the necessary skills development and training to our local South African labour force so that we can no longer get these skills from outside of the country. The establishment of REEC, Renewable Energy Centre of Excellence, was a direct result of a study that was done in the Northern Cape province, where we interviewed and surveyed a lot of the independent power producers in that area around renewable energy, and what are their skills gaps. Their obvious reasons for bringing the skills from Spain or wherever it comes from is that they cannot find the relevant skills at the level that they require in South Africa. Hence, we felt the need to establish the Renewable Energy Centre of Excellence, where we will be able to supply the skills at the level they require. They therefore no longer need to bring in the skills from outside the country. We will likewise do the same in various other energy sectors, but that is one concrete example of what we're trying to do to combat that situation here in the country at the moment. In terms of the potential job numbers, don't align governments move towards nuclear. The job numbers that you see in our report are green jobs, potential green jobs. Yes, if we are to address the, I think it's the 10,000 megawatt supply that we need, nuclear is one power plant to possibly do that. However, in terms of the number of jobs that can be created, more can be created in the green job sector. This is a debate that is ongoing. What we put there is really specifically dealing with green jobs, and yes, renewable energy is factored into those numbers under energy generation.
What is our strategy around natural gas exploration? Yes, the Honourable Member is very correct in saying that we are just beginning to venture into this particular subsector. A lot of groundwork is being done in terms of engagement. Our skills summit in Saldanha Bay will help us in that regard. Also international benchmarking, which currently is taking place in EWC, is also going to help us in regard to developing a responsive, impactful and appropriate natural gas strategy for the sector. Thank you, Chair. I think we've covered the questions. If not, please let us know.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable S raised this question about downstream boilers and people not being trained. I guess this is quite one of the issues where most of the welding that takes place is not done under the auspices of CETAS, but under the auspices of labour brokers, who then bring in quite a number of workers, most of them also international workers. We've seen that over and over. So there's a CETA, and I guess the other two CETAs involved in this particular project. We've over and over emphasized this point. But secondly, we've also made funds available for training of individuals in that area. The issue about our chair and DG, allow me to address it. The chair is not full-time employed by the Masita. The chair is appointed in terms of the Skill Development Act of 1998, amended subsequently, Act number 97 of 1998, and the subsequent amendment in 2009. The chair is an independent person and appointed by the minister, and therefore does not hold a full-time position, but only attends the meetings and has to perform the oversight value. Therefore, the chair can be employed full-time at another venue or at another institution. So it's not a double job, if I may just clarify that. I, for one, used to chair the University of the Western Cape as an external person, but I'm full-time employed by the CETA. And let me also emphasize that our chairperson, in terms of Treasury regulation, is not paid. Other members who are not employed by the state are paid by the CETA. Our chairperson, in this case, have waived that right of payment. The issue around Nelson Mandela and why it's so important, Chair, let me say this. There are 25 universities in the country, but I think what Nelson Mandela University has done is positioned itself in that space. And I was not even aware that the colleagues were involved with Nelson Mandela, but the issue, the area where we involved with Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, in particular, is around the renewable energy and waste. Now, when one looks at that, it is prevalent in that area where we've got two major motor manufacturers, or three actually, General Motors, VW, and Mercedes-Benz, and Ford also manufactures in that area. For that particular matter, we have a chair, a research chair, that the Mercita funds at Nelson Mandela. And as I indicated, our interest in particular is around the research and innovation with regard to solar energy and solar vehicles. That's why we started funding that. And therefore, the other interest by the other CETAs does not stand over that. But just to elaborate, that we are not preferencing one university above the other. We have relationships with Cornell University of Technology, also around energy cars. We do fund CPUT around math science development in that area. First University, UJ, University of the Western Cape, University of Cape Town, and in particular, let me just stop the UCT because there was a question about entrepreneurship. We've looked at students who've completed a BSc engineering in any field, mechanical, electrical, metallurgical, and we then developed what we call a master's program in technopreneurship, which is entrepreneurship for innovative learners so that we don't lose them to industry where they just become numbers, but they can continue with innovation. That's one of the programs with it. Another program that we're doing is also out of the country. It's called, it's with Brennan University. And here we're particularly interested in developing an epistemological knowledge base within the area of artisan development, looking at competency frameworks of artisans and of lecturers. We've got two PhD students, ironically they're from Western Cape, and one from the Eastern Cape that's looking at cost-benefit analysis of artisan development. So just so that our span is much wider than that. The localization of the component and how will we developing workers, I must say that if I give overall statistics, we're training over 14,000 learners this year at a cost of over R1 billion. 1,400 learners, ships, unemployed engines, 200 skilled programs, 1,200 employed bursaries, 100 artisans, 4,500 workplace experience, college placement, and bursary holders. But in particular to the field of today, we have trained 950 apprentices over the period. And we currently have 269 in training in this particular area. We have trained 1,100 millwrights for this trade, for the electrical industry. And we currently have 304 in training. 64 national certificates in electrical engineering, which were completed, 50 are registered. 712 national certificates in mechatronics. We have 80 registered currently. 217 in electrical engineers completed work integrated learning. Those are our University of Technology learners that we funded, and 217 of them are completed. We've got 54 still in training. So that's the footprint of Mazita within this industry and what we're funding. The question from Karalicha, my humble apologies if it sounds like misleading. What I gave you was a number that we funded. Now, the nice thing about technology, and it's working, it's not off to date. I've checked with the office. 500 were funded. 250 by Mercita and 250 by Energy Cita. Currently, the college gives us the following statistics. 455 have completed their training, and 45 are in training. Reasons for that is that they cannot take 500 at one go, but take them staggered because of the classroom sizes that they have. And they've assured me that these learners will complete their training by end of April. So my apologies if that sounded misleading to you. Maybe the presentation to be saying 500 is I know what we funded, should have clarified that. Honorable Madala, I want to respond to your comment about checking and placements and registrations of fly-by-nights. This happens all the time. And the CETA zone is very difficult if we don't begin the other agencies of government, such as police. We get people who open up doors and close them within days, or train learners in Alberton and a Holy Name Trinity, and they don't even have a single welding machine, but learners are learning welding. Such people are reported to the authorities if it comes to our notice, and we don't accredit them. Because our accreditation and the role of the CETA, you have to understand that. One is the primary role, the index role, its quintessential responsibility is that of quality assurance. And we cannot quality assure if a place doesn't exist. So therefore, it's a humble plea, we implore people to contact us and tell us that my learner, my kid is going to this institution, is it accredited to check with us? Because the accreditation is a dual one. We do the quality assurance and we do the accreditation, but the registration happens through Umalusi and through the QCGO. And I think that's where it slips up and where people take advantage about that. Then the CETA's role is about paying grants. We do not pay grants to institutions like that. We don't fund learners who are not linked to industry. In our case, our funding goes to the industry, and the industry then has to say there's a place for work for this learner. Have we developed any mechanisms for entrepreneurship? I actually ponder on that question, and I in quite a long time in Cedars now, I think a total of 12 years. At one stage it was a key performance area of Cedars to develop what they call entrepreneurship, new venture creation. But I must say it failed dismally at Cedars because it's not the core responsibility of CETA. CETA's responsibility is to assist the learner or to help the learner being trained as an entrepreneur and not to create an entrepreneurship. I guess if we were entrepreneurs, the fight I have all the time, what definition of entrepreneur? If we were entrepreneurs, we would not be sitting in these chairs. We would have been running founders and factories. So CETA's are ill placed to develop businesses. Therefore, we work with CEDA and we work with other agencies, and our responsibility is then to look at the development, the education, training, development of that particular learner to enable him to start the business. But we can't start the business for you. And on top of that, before I miss that, our quotas are that we have to take learners from rural areas. So there are quite a number of learners that come from the rural area. We can give you that breakdown. If I'm forwarded to your number, just to give you the breakdown of number of rural learners we've trained. The landscape changes that you're asking is quite a, I hope I'm not putting my foot into it, it's a political question. I can't really answer. But this is the third iteration of CETAS. I'm doing the third iteration of CETAS. It started off in the third iteration of 25 CETAS. It was reduced to 23 and now to 21. Yet there were a few CETAs that were affected. I think energy and water was one of them. Chemical remained same. Mercy lost the retail fuel stations to wholesale and retail CETA. It did not affect as much. We don't know what the fourth iteration of CETAs would be, the ministers as well. The project supporters in the Eastern Cape are quite a vast number of projects. We support the FET through Nelson Mandela, through our 20 million, they had to work with the six FETs in that province in developing the mechatronics and autotronics. We support a number of technical high schools to increase the pipeline of learners getting into apprenticeships and into engineering. We have a number of projects with the Premier's office, we have a project with the Premier's office, with the ITZ in East London, Glafnet and Kerop are also beneficiaries of our particular projects. Thank you, Chair. Right, sister. Oh, sorry, the last one, if you do, Musa. I will get the back of my
question. Yeah. We can respond quickly, sorry, I do apologize, member.
NUMSA is the largest union within the Mercita Sable. We have over 600,000 people working within the Mercita sector, 44,000 companies, of which 18,000 pay their levies. Now, MISA, Solidarity, UHASA have all agreed that NUMSA leads the pack of the union. They form their own kind of solidarity and work as a union, which is very gratifying to see that unions work together in terms of prospering workers within the sector. So that's the relationship we have with them. NUMSA does not bring anything to party. That was the following question. It does not got weird. What we are funding is the funding, the development of the shop stewards, projects within small business where NUMSA is its members, and that's what we're funding. And it's not any particular initiative of NUMSA, but of the collective union within the Mercita. Thanks, Mashita.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I'll try to be brief, and my colleagues will add. In terms of the question on the 1,679 vacancies, if you go to our slide 26 and 24, that's going to be telling you more about it. These are high-level skills. These are the skills that we're talking about, such as the imported welder skills. These are the skills that industry has identified. And it is industry that came to us to say we do not want to import welders from Taiwan and all over the world. Let us go into the Scoped Welding Program together. And the vision of CETA is not to import, but to export our coded welders across the world, just like Taiwan and everybody else does. And that program, Hakita-wise, Hurry Up-wise,
we conceptualized it about 10 months ago, and it's already yielded a first 200 golded weld as we speak now. So the scarce and critical skills, and this is that been identified, and we're working very fast to make that happen. If you look on page 24, I think it is, we're also starting this relationship with the Department of Home Affairs to ask them, if there is some request from companies to import skills, tell us so we know exactly and can work with you and can develop them with new skills. And then also, yeah, so let me stop on that one there. In terms of the people, the rural people, the skills that we identify for fracking and so on, research has already shown that should the fracking go ahead, it will be in the backyard of community people in the rural area where the fracking, where the gas is located, that we're going to have people monitoring on a daily basis what it is, what it looks like underground. And those skills, the development of those skills within rural communities is something that we have started developing a curriculum for already. So that's happening. Youth not trained for relevant skills, I think so you asked that one. It's true. In this country, we have made it sexy, sorry for that word in Parliament, but growth in universities, rather than to universities of technology, to equity colleges, to whatever. We ourselves are products of that. That doesn't use us. And what we're trying to do in our CL, and I'm sure others are also trying, is to say, where are the real jobs? What gives you a real job? Because skills development, if it does not give you a job, is a waste of time. So whether it's universities doing that, CETA's doing that, at the end of the day, there must be employment possibilities, either employment creation within companies or self-employment. That must be the outcome. And yet, where we come from in our history, the fickle place, I know we don't like to go, well, some people don't like to go there, but there's something that we must recognize. The CETA system is 14 years old. The German system is 150 years old. From where we come from, we've done remarkably well, and we're sometimes very hard on ourselves. I do think we should sometimes set ourselves on the back, not forget what's lying ahead, but to see how much we have achieved as a country as well. The fact remains, we've got people who have got the wrong skills, they have gone to university for the wrong degree, and what we are doing is to say, come back, let's see where you left. What have you got already? What is the missing bit? So that you can become employable based also on the skills and critical skills. So that's what we're doing in the CETA, and I'll talk to one more and then I'll hand over.
Yeah. The bells are going to ring in the next 15 minutes.
Chair, I'm in an unfortunate position to be third all the time, so but I can really stop then and say, just hand it over and then people can go.
I know not all the some there would be some follow-up questions, and some of the questions may not have been responded to. But we don't have enough time now. A lot of them are finishing this close our meeting.
Thank you. I actually have got another question. I think Dr. Patel did put his foot into something with his labor broker. So I've got no more questions. But I think really we need to plan these presentations better. We haven't none of the members at lunch. We need to be in the house in 20 minutes time. So let me say with respect. That's my
ability. You realize that even if what we just had would not have had enough time to interrogate what you presented. So, accept that. In fact, I meant to close the meeting at 1:15, so I had no intention of going beyond this. But I realized that Mela still wanted to ask more questions. Okay, we will do that. We'll have our own discussion about that. The department, the representatives of the CETAS, three. Thank you very much, and members of the public who are here. Honorable members, the meeting is closed. Thank you very much.